Listen to the Carbcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carbcast, or check our website at www.thecarbcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. Welcome to the Carbcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chalks. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie!
Hello and welcome to episode 46 of the Carbcast. Upper 40s now. How are we doing, Mark?
I don't know. I still think 46 is classed as a mid-40. 47's an upper.
Yeah, true.
It's in the mid-range. Although we can call it an upper because my PB is still standing at 46.
I think I had cluster out the wall pack at 46.
Either way, it is a stonking old mirror.
Yeah, I think it was 46, but you were there and your memory's better than mine, but I'm pretty sure it was 46. But, what's going down? You're on the bank. I can hear birds tweeting.
I'm on the bank again, as I usually am on a Monday. You know, a lot of people hate Mondays. I quite like them. But got down yesterday. There's been quite a few fish out of the weekend on these big southwesterlies. It's now blowing a northerly, and not a lot's happening. I was up, having a beer with a lad. Graham is called. I've not seen him for about 15 years on here. That was good to catch up, but didn't see anything last night. I was up at 5:30 this morning and stayed up for a couple of hours. Saw nothing.
So basically, yeah. There's been loads of fish out and you're blanking.
Well, the fish know I'm here, they've gone to ground, they're scared.
Cool, well, I've been fishing, still busy. It's Monday as we record this, and I hope to be fishing next Sunday. I'm going to make a plan to get everything done in the house. Got a full day's decorating left, and everything else is done. The new sofa's ordered. We're unpacked. We're out of boxes. Most of my fishing gear is still in storage while we're waiting for the new high security shed thingy to be made. But I can't do a lot now. I'm in limbo, really. So I might as well go and grab the fishing gear out of storage and go fishing next week. So just been speaking to me pal Roger, and we've made a rough plan to get down somewhere next week. We've got a place in mind that I think if the conditions are right, then we'll probably make a 3-hour trek towards the southern half of the country and hopefully get fishing.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us where you're going, or is it a top secret?
It's not a secret. I just
you just don't want hordes of women flocking to your location, do you?
Yeah, I want to make sure I can get a peg first. I'll tell people once we're there. it's a day ticket-y type place, so you can get season tickets on their day tickets. We're not 100% going there. It depends on the conditions. I mean, when we haven't really got anywhere specific we want to go, then, it very much depends on the fishing. This particular lake we're thinking about is quite big, and there's quite a bit of the lake you can't fish, so... there's no point going to one of those types of lake if like there's no wind or something, or if there's a wind that's blowing, you know, towards the bank that you can't fish. So I'm not, it's not 100% we'll go there. If conditions are right, then we'll go. But in the meantime, I need to get on Google Earth, find out what winds blow what way, see which way they're going to blow next week, and adjust our plans accordingly. I think that's the plan.
Yeah.
But it's not a secret. I just don't want to blow ourselves up. There's a big southerly coming. It looks like it's decent on the one particular bank. I don't want to get down there and find four or five carp cast listeners waiting to come and fish with us and we can't get on. So
yeah. Oh, I didn't tell you what I did last week. You know, after we recorded on the bank and you got it out pretty quick.
Yeah.
Well, as we know, I'd had a fish. My waistling, you know, my cradle, they're up drying. And just being that, old school angler in me, a couple of lads I don't know hooked into me swim any good. Like, nah, just bream. And I realised, if they've listened to the carp cast, they know I'm full of crap.
Yeah.
I did have bream, though, so I'm not totally fibbing.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
It wasn't. Yeah, I got another one last week as well after we recorded.
Did you? Any size?
To get that one in? No. But the odd thing was, you know, when you get those outer blue captures where you're not expecting anything to happen?
Yeah.
It was about 9:30 in the morning. I'm starting to tidy things up. And it was more weather where you start thinking, you know, they're going to be up on the shallows or zig weather. And my fourth rod, which was down in a hard spot in about 15 foot, rattled off.
Nice.
So a bit of a one to buck the trend. We don't always get it right. It was nice to catch one.
Cool. We are proudly sponsored by DNA Baits. You can check out all their stuff at dnabaits.com and you can get an extra discount off their already decent stuff. You can use the code CARPCAST5 at the checkout for an extra 5% discount off their already cheap post-free deals, their liquids, their Zig kits. Be sure to check out the new bait, the Switch, which everybody's raving about, but they do post free deals on like the Secret 7, the Nutter S, the SLK or Ocean X. You can get a boilie of your choice, including 3 kilo of matching pellets or stick mix. You get a tub of wafters or pop-ups as well, and 250ml of the matching bait soak. You can have this delivered to your door for a 5 kilo deal, only $59.99. A 10 kilo deal, $94.99. 20 kilo deal, $149.99. And the 50 key deal is £320. It's delivered post-free. You can get an extra 5% off that on their website at dnabaits.com by using the code CARPCAST5. If you want more info on the liquids and stuff that they do, you really need to check out the Mark Holmes edition where we go deep into liquids. It was a few weeks ago now. We also have a DNA tip of the week from one of their consultants. I believe you spoke to someone this week, Mark, haven't you?
I did. I spoke to a couple of them while they were fishing a match as well. It's Chris Bones Holmes and Neil Rivers. And I got a few tips off them and we're putting one in now.
Who are we going to have them?
Do we have Chris first? He gave me two.
Okay, let's get Mr. Chris Bones Holmes right on now.
DNA tip of the week.
So my DNA tip would definitely be the new Betastim liquid. Big fan of using liquids. I use them quite a lot. One of the problems I find with liquids, and what I think a lot of people don't realise, is when you pour a liquid into a Spodnix, quite often it'll wash off through the water column. So what I've been doing over the past 12 months is I've been cooking my hemp, draining it and then pouring Betastim on it and leaving it to soak for 24 hours. What happens is the Betastim absorbs into the hemp seed. So as the hemp seed drops to the bottom, the liquid seeps out of the hemp. I've also done this very well with sweet corn. Soaking sweet corn overnight, the sweet corn goes brown as the Betastim absorbs into the sweet corn. Again, when the sweet corn falls to the bottom of the lake, the liquid's seeping out of the sweet corn instead of just being washed off through the water column. So I'd say that was one of my big tips for using the new Betastim liquid.
DNA tip of the week.
So thanks to Chris. The DNA tip of the week is going to be every week. And don't forget all their other stuff. Like I say, the Zig deal is like 2.5 kilos of spod mix. You get a bottle of their very famous sticky sweet liquid to dip the stuff in. Get the Fox Zig aligners with it as well. And that's £30 post free to your door. Or you can go large on that for an extra fiver. Again, using the code CARPCAST5 when you check out, we'll give you an extra 5% discount. It does support the CARPCAST. They support us. So yeah, please support dnabaits.com. You can check it all out. And every week we'll be back with a new DNA tip of the week. So what else is going on, Mark? Have we seen anything on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
How can we miss it? The Carp Society saga rolls... Oh, bleep. The Carp Society saga rolls on.
Yeah, it does roll on. I'm told the old directors are not going without a fight, which is understandable. They're probably going to make some sort of legal case questioning the authority of the people that have just voted them out. But I'm also told that it's pretty watertight. So have you heard anything new?
Not much other than what's been on the net in the statement through Cartwheel made by Derek Stritton. You've seen this one yourself?
Yeah, I did.
Shared quite a lot.
Yes.
Should we just run over a few of the bullet points from there?
Yeah, so they're saying that there was a properly convened EGM, Extraordinary General Meeting of the Carp Society, held in Lechlade, where their headquarters is. It was the evening of Thursday, the 12th of May. A number of changes were made to the board of directors. All the decisions made at the meeting were based on unanimous votes. Four directors were removed and four new directors were elected. The ones removed were Malcolm Collett, David Manuel, Derek Buxton and Shane Thompson. And the four new members were Greg Fletcher, who was the original treasurer and founder member when the group was formed in 1981. Brian Sefton, who's a horseshoe fishery manager during the 90s. He acquired the Farriers Complex for the Carp Site, which is an extremely desirable set of lakes these days. It's a syndicate and the main source of the society income. And Miles Carter, the current Carp Society's fisheries manager, and Derek Stritton, who was also a founder member and former chairman and treasurer of the society, and he's chairman of the newly formed board. Two further directors were co-opted in: Marsh Prattley, who's a former chairman as well, an extremely experienced fisheries manager, owns Orchid Lakes as we know, and Paul Boychat, who's a former society director. He was the one who was controversially removed from the previous board. He's been a stalwart of the society for many years. He's a regional organizer for 11 years before joining the board. And Paul was one of the people who was allegedly received an illegal payment from the previous board, made as bonus payments, which I've been told were not allowable. Technically it was a VAT refund, I think, which should have gone directly into the coffers. It's claimed these payments were made improperly and Paul has agreed to pay his back. That's the terms of him being put back in. And I'm told the society are seeking to take action to reclaim any other improper payments made to former directors. The new board's committed to return to the Carp Society as a democratic organisation, as it was always intended to be. We'll obviously see details. The membership rate now has been reduced to £25, not the £95 advertised by the previous board, to encourage members, no doubt. And they also intend to make all current horseshoe, farriers and Langholm syndicate members Carp Society members. So rather than having a separate membership, they're going to make them actual members of the society. Membership will also be reinstated for all current bailiffs who were deprived of their right of membership in controversial circumstances. There's loads of legal proceedings going on. No further information will be available in the short term. The bigger picture will be made available later on, once this legal stuff is gone through. New Society would like to pass their thanks on for the support they've already received, and they want to specifically thank John Seal, Bill Ward, Tim Paisley and Miles Carter for their efforts in helping them get to where they are. There's plenty of others who cannot be named but will receive credit. And obviously, Derek, this is all from Derek Stritton. Interesting. It seems very clean. I'm pretty sure it's not going to be. These former directors are going to stake a case. Whether they have money to do this, who knows? It has been alleged that maybe they've already transferred some money to solicitors to fight these proceedings. But I'm pretty sure the bank accounts will be frozen from now onwards. So yeah, we're just gonna have to grab our popcorn, I think, Mark, and sit and watch how this one develops. I don't think it's the end of it, that's for sure. But I do think that the, you know, that democracy will rule in this case eventually. But I think there'll probably be 12 months of legal battles first, I would suggest.
Yeah, it's certainly a I think this could be a turning point, is a step in the right direction to getting the society back to actually being a society for carp anglers, which it was originally intended to be.
Well, there hasn't been one for a number of years, have they? And I think it's more relevant to the young, you know, to the people coming into the sport. I'd like to see the regional meetings done again. I think there is room for
definitely.
That. You know, the regional slideshows in each area. So, I mean, there's quite a few carp society or people who would be suitable for running the Yorkshire region in your area. I don't know who could maybe do it in the northwest. I'm not really sure.
I'm sure someone will throw the hat in the ring, so to speak. But as a man who always speaks sense, Julian Cundiff had a few things to say, not concerning the political goings-on, but how the society can go forward, and he makes six brilliant points. There's the first one, which you've just touched upon. You need to have regional meetings with good speakers, not demanding stupid fees. Make the regional organisers accountable and generate funds for the publications and society projects. Totally agreed there.
I agree with that. I mean, the only thing I will say against that, I mean, I know Jules gives his time for virtually nothing, just his expenses, tirelessly. He always does it. You know, he's come and spoke for us on the Carpcast social, and I know he will go anywhere you ask him to within reason, and you know, he'll charge you the bare minimum. He'll you know, charge you pretty much what it costs him. Fishing's been good to Jules, and Jules certainly gives back. You know, he answers all letters, 100%. Messages. He's fantastic. But I would say he's unique. You know, people's time is precious. You know, I would love to have enough money and have my life settled enough to be able to go and do good things for free all day long. But unfortunately, that's not the way it works. You know, I struggle to pay my bills every month, same as probably most people out there, and live way beyond my means. So asking you know, everybody to just give tirelessly to the Carp Society, the same as Jules does, is probably unrealistic. But
I see where you're coming from there, but you know, just charging a few fuel expenses. I mean, I've done quite a few talks over the past, and you know, I've never actually, the only thing I've ever asked for is Jaffa cakes.
Yeah, and I know what you're saying. I mean, you know, I don't think you should, you know, we book people for the Northern Angling Show. You know, we've paid significant sums of money for big names. You know, everybody who is booked, you know, gets something. I mean, what's the going rate for a personal appearance for these days, you know? Without putting a number on things, but you know, how much do you think Terry Hearn's going to charge you?
I have not got a clue. Though, well, we've got to look at where the money be going. It's, you know, the Carp Society gets some momentum and gets back to what it used to be. You know, the money's going back into carp fishing, whereas you know, nowadays it's for where is the money going? A lot of it is charities, and you know, that's all good work.
I mean, maybe there could be some sort of system where it goes into like credits. I mean, the society do have something to give back. You know, they have some fantastic syndicates and lakes and fishing. So maybe that could be payment. You know, like for timing. I'm a bit more cynical. I mean, I'm not actually saying this about the Carp Society, but you know, if you go to work for somebody else, there kind of needs to be an end goal. Yes, the Carp Society. Well, I mean, the Carp Society hasn't in the last 10 years been good for fishing. If you went and spoke at the Carp Society show at Sandown, you know, that is the specific purpose of that show, was to make a private company a lot of money. So why would you ever give your time for nothing just because it's under the banner of the Carp Society? You know, it's a business and somebody's making money out of it. So I wouldn't expect anybody to go and speak there for the love of carp fishing because somebody's making money out of it. So, I mean, there is, you know, the way the world works in these things, it's I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. You know, they have a fantastic farriers syndicate. It may be that, you know, you give up X amount of time per year and you are allowed, X amount of days fishing on the lake or something like that. Or, you know, so many credits to fish horseshoe or whatever, you know. I think,
I think that's pretty much the way things work. Anyway, I did two slideshows for a couple of lake meeting, syndicate meetings run by the same person, and I got a 3 years membership of one of his syndicates. Yeah. Didn't ask for it, but I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. For giving you time, it always it's good karma. You know, it comes full circle, I think.
Yeah, so yeah, I'd like to see it. You know, not saying I wouldn't give my time at all. We certainly doing our PR job. We're doing our bit on here, I guess. But yeah, I'm happy to promote it for the youth in the sport sort of thing. You know, I'd more than happily do junior fishings or anything like that. That's a bit of fun as well. You know, it's a bit of a social, isn't it? Maybe get a chance to fish yourself or whatever. And then obviously you're helping. There's a specific purpose there. You know. But obviously, when you're organising regional meetings, I've organised regional meetings. You know, Roger Bacon and I did the carp show in Altrincham, where basically the same as kind of like the regional meetings used to be. We book a speaker, we get a little tackle shop in there. It's a hell of a lot of stress. It's a hell of a lot of stress, and to be doing that. I mean, it used to be to raise funds for the society. I mean, the society have some very good revenue streams, you know, when it's run properly and directors aren't creaming all the money off the top, allegedly. When it's run properly, you know, they have some fantastic syndicates and day ticket lakes that generate money. So I'm pretty sure they don't. You know, that's why the regional meetings don't exist anymore. I mean, they haven't needed them to generate a significant amount of money. So it's not like you're trying to raise money for a non-profit organisation. It is a profitable business, I'm sure. You know, with the Farrier Syndicate, with the Horseshoe Lake, it is a business. You know, so the regional, if regional meetings did come back, it's basically for just that local area, isn't it, to give people a decent night out, to give the young uns a chance to go and watch some people talk about carp let's get back to Jules's points anyway. I mean, it is a good one that I would like to see those regional meetings, but generally in quite a lot of areas, you know, there is some local guy doing meetings in areas anyway. You've got Ian McMillan does ones in the Stoke sort of area. You've got ones up in Doncaster, haven't you, that are run by, is it Carp Talk and stuff?
Yeah, Anglian Publications have done them. We've got some good speakers up there. There's Jeff Crawford doing the York Carp Group, and those are just the ones that I know of around this end of the country, and I'm sure there's quite a few others.
Yeah, I've seen posters and stuff for ones in different parts. I mean, somebody is doing it. If it could all be under the Carp Society banner, that is a hell of a lot of work to be doing it for nothing. And you know, back in the day, it was to support the Carp Society, but they have ways of supporting themselves financially now that are, you know, pretty decent. So I'm not sure how practical these regional meetings are and who would want to do it, but it obviously would be a good thing for the people in that area if it was done properly. But yeah, we'll see. What else has Joe's got to say?
Yeah, his second point: a Carp Society magazine of some nature featuring society news, historical writing and so on. Again, authors should give their articles free of charge.
I mean, see my previous point about that. Yes, I would like to see a Carp Society magazine. I actually, while I've been moving and doing all my bits and bobs, it was a box of old magazines my mum gave me, she found in her attic from when I was a kid, and on the top was an original Carp Fisher magazine. I had a quick flick through it again, and yeah, I mean, I think if you're joining a society about something that you're into, you know, you're joining a club, i.e. the Carp Society, and you pay a yearly membership, then I think you should get something for it. And I think that thing should be a magazine. So, completely agree. I'd love to see that redone. A 6-monthly or quarterly magazine as something that you actually get for the membership fee. Yeah, I'd love to see that. As to the people writing for it for free, I'll remain on the fence for that one.
I wouldn't mind doing that too, but you know what I'm like with writing. I can sit here and knock 1,500, 2,000 words up in an hour, no problem at all. You know, I find it easy. I can't add up, but you know, writing's easy to me.
I don't mind writing. But again, my cynical side is that was your low battery, wasn't it, by the sound of it?
No, that was the left hand rod liner. Or I've just been done, or there's a bream on end. But either way, go on. No, it was three up. But anyway, carry on.
Carry on. Yeah, I'm guessing, like, if the bigger picture is any money generated from the society goes into a non-profit making thing that goes back into, like, you know, junior fishings and stuff like that. I'd have to know where the profits were going from all this stuff. But more than happily give articles time or whatever for stuff like that. If it's going into a good cause, if it's just going into, I'd have to know what's going on. To be fair, like I say, the Carp Society makes money. It makes a not insignificant amount of money either. So
But obviously with the new regime, the money is actually going to be put back and not creamed off like the previous directors allegedly did. It's a great word, that. But my other point is, my first ever article was in a Carp Fisher when Jules was editor there. You know, I had a few letters backwards and forwards. He helped me on the way, told me how to improve things, and when I got in. But you know what the magazines are like nowadays? To get in a magazine, you get in through your sponsors. A lot of people out there, they want to get in a magazine, but they haven't got the sponsors. So this is another outlet for people to get into writing. So it can only be a good thing for magazine returns.
Yeah, of course. My only problem comes with is when you get... I mean, I may be a bit too cynical because of being in a band or an entertainer for many, many years. You always get asked to do charity dues. You're basically asked to come and perform for nothing. But everybody else there is getting paid. The bar staff are getting paid. You know, somebody's making the money on the drinks. Pretty much everybody's getting paid except the entertainer. Like, you're the only one that's doing it for free because everybody else is just at work. But your work, you know, for some reason people think you can do it for nothing. So if everybody from top to bottom is doing it for free, you know, if the directors aren't getting paid 30, 40, 50 grand a year, if the chairman's not getting a wage, you know, if nobody's getting a wage, I'm more than happy to, give my time, services or whatever. If somebody along that chain somewhere is getting paid, then I want to get paid. I think that's my stance on it generally. So we would have to find out. But yeah, if people are being paid for administrating anything, I'm not just talking about the Carp Society, I'm talking about anything. If somebody's getting paid somewhere along the way, then everybody should be paid top to bottom. That's my stance.
Yeah. Okay, should we move on to this next point?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've done the first two to death. A Carp Society conference with a Carp Society theme featuring speakers selected on interest, not because their sponsors are at the show.
Yeah, I wonder if Jules is just commenting on the general state of carp fishing with that remark. I agree. You know, things should be based on content as opposed to commercial reasons.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that happens right the way through life.
You look at, I'm just taking your Northern Show for an example. You know, you've got, you know, some of the best speakers, you know, Ali Adamidi and Dean Macy. They were there because of Corder and Guru anyway.
Well, you make a good point there with our show. So the first year we booked artists as people that we wanted. Julian was one of them. You know, Julian opened our first ever show. We booked a lineup of people to sell tickets, basically. You know, we booked a list of a list of names that we wanted to talk. The second year, as a lot of the other shows work, like the big stand holders, so your Corders, your Foxes, the Nash, like the big names, kind of all wanted a slot on the stage as part of their deal to as part of their deal to attend the show, and you know, it's basically as a way of promoting their brands. Now that's very common, and Jules has alluded to it there. That's what tends to happen at fishing shows. Now I would say, with no disrespect to any of the people that spoke, because some of the people that were on that second show have still spoke at subsequent shows, but it was probably our least entertaining lineup of people. Not the individual people, because like I said, even individual people have since spoke at future shows, but we weren't in control of the lineup. One of our skills as an event organizer is to make the day run smooth, to, you know, balance it. We've got some match content, we've got some predator content, we've then got a decent cart one, then we've then got, you know, to get a broad spectrum of talks that are going to keep people interested and sat in front of that stage all day. As soon as you start, you know, going to companies and saying, right, we need somebody from Fox, we need somebody from Matrix, we need somebody from Corda, we need, you know, then all of a sudden that artistic direction's gone out the window, and we only ever did that on that second show, and it was probably our weakest stage show, and it's been fantastic ever since. You know, it's like, I'd say standing room only. There wasn't even standing room around the stage, as you'll see from any of the pictures. And so I completely agree with Jules there. Things should be booked on merit, entertainment merit, as opposed to anything commercial. The problem is the Carp Society show is a successful show, and so naturally that's commercial. It's a business. It's had to sell, you know, stand space. He's right. It should be, but is it realistic what he's saying? You know, he's basically, what he's alluding to here is a completely non-profit making angling first kind of business, and I'm right behind it. You know, if it can be done, if it can, you know, if the society can be run in that way, including the show, you know, it's just the best possible show it can be for anglers. But as I know, I mean, our show in Manchester, it cost £114,000 to host. Now that has to be paid for somewhere along the way. You know, if you previously had an arrangement to get the big companies there, you've had an arrangement that they get stage time or whatever, then it's going to be very difficult to do it as you know, how Jules is talking. But we'll see. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. That's how I would like to see it too.
The next point, number four, regular Carp Society updates in the weeklies and monthlies.
Which
I think you know, we're short corner in you know, the Carp Worlds that'll you know, feature at the month, and you know, the other mags.
Yeah, again, that costs money. You know, magazine space costs money. So, but you know,
well, if your editors of the magazines are supporting the Carp Society, then I'm sure there's advertising to be had within the Carp Society for the magazine. And that was a rat running into my bobbin.
Again, though, you know, every extra page that's in a magazine costs somebody. You know, it's an extra page printing. I don't know what the physical cost of that is, but it does cost money. And you know, I'm sure Tim Pays has given enough of his time and efforts and probably finances already. So, but yeah, again, it's idealistic, but good.
Yeah, Jules' next point. Regular and honest news and reviews of all the Carp Society waters. Yeah. Presumably on the Carp Society website and the Facebook page, and yeah, that's fair enough. We're all interested to know what's going off and how big the Farriers Commons are getting. Yeah, please tell us.
Yeah, I think that lake has, well, I think you probably had to be good friends of the previous regime to have any chance of getting on that lake. Because again, it was probably more difficult to get on that lake than it was to actually join the Carp Society, and that wasn't easy. It's pull down, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But yeah, carry on.
Yep, and Jules' sixth and final point, the return of the original blue background Carp Society logo, not the awful new one.
I can't comment. Who knows?
Yeah. There's a picture he's posted of the original one, and you know, it's one we all know. And I don't know even know what the current one looks like.
No, I don't. I mean, I love Jules. He's got some great points. They're all extremely idealistic, and they're all, you know, completely non self centered, just for the benefit of carp fishing, and that's great. You know, practically, yeah, it'd be nice if they could all happen. So, yes, we've 15 minutes of the Carp Society, but it's given me a chance for a minor rant, a little Jamie rant.
Oh, do you want to rant on the next point?
Go on.
Yeah, it's, this is something I've put, because we've covered a bit before, we've touched on. You know, Sean Anlow actually sent me this in a message. He's our Carp Cast social top rod with three fish.
Yeah.
He was down at Brazel's with some friends of his not so long back. And he actually witnessed someone with four 20-pound plus carp in the same retainer. They've placed them all in the same cradle. Probably, you know, a couple of, you know, at least one other angler fellow who was with Sean did have a quiet word. I'm sure it was a quiet word, obviously.
Yeah.
But apparently the fellow didn't think he was doing anything wrong.
Well, this is education, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Without a doubt. One retainer, one carp.
On
end of.
Yeah, on next week's show, we have Kevin Nash, our new unnamed feature, where you can win a set of Slaphead bobbins, the complete kit, set of three. If you would like to name that feature, we haven't got a name for it yet. We've got about, there's two posts going, one on the Carpcast page, one on the official Carpcast page. There's about 60 replies under each. And we're probably going to close that in a day or two. Probably you'll have a couple of days after you hear this, if you listen to it when it first comes out, to get stuck in, have a chance of winning a set of slap heads if you can name the Nashy feature. But I've already recorded Kevin's first one, and one of the things he comments on was the brace row that Daryl Peck got involved in, and hundreds of other people on the net a couple of weeks ago. We did cover it, didn't we? And spoiler alert, Kevin kind of agrees with what we said. To the point of they've changed company policy, because he does think that, you know, it's down to the media to set the examples. If you have a picture, you know, a Billingsgate type shot of four or five fish, you know, on the mat, then people are going to want to recreate it. And like you say, it's not their fault. They don't think they're doing anything wrong because they've seen it in a magazine or on a video or a DVD or whatever. So it's education.
100%.
It's education. Oh. So, you know, it's good if you see somebody doing something like that, have a word, maybe explain to them why it's wrong. I know it's difficult to confront people on the bank, but as I said in that brace discussion we had a little while ago, I did it when I was a kid because I saw that Billingsgate shot, that shot with four or five carp, Pete Springate or whatever it was, four or five carp laid out on in front of him, and I tried to recreate it, and these carp went mental. They'd been sacked up all night, and you know, they're only like 7-8 pounders or whatever the fish were at the time, and I didn't think I was doing anything wrong, but we know different. So
yeah, and you mentioned the you know, the Kev Nash Slaphead competition there. Ask the two competition winners from our clothing competition that we ran that we mentioned last week, and I forgot who they were. But,
yeah,
we should be getting the swag this week, because I've posted it out. That's Robert Grayson and Nick Rustage. So, yeah, well done on that, and sorry for being a bit late.
Good. I recognise both those names as kind of regular contributors to our threads and stuff on the official Carpcast fan page and the normal Carpcast page. So, yeah, I'm glad a couple of regulars have won.
I think after I messaged Robert to get his address, he went on the Carpcast page and liked about 10 different posts.
Fantastic. And we hope to see pictures of you in full Carpcast attire. We hope the carp gods giveth. If you want to buy any of our gear, you can do that from our website, thecarpcast.com. I think the website's been up and down over the last week, where Reese has been doing some work. He's working on version 2 of the website. So I know some people have had problems logging into the Carpcast extra section, which is like a premium section. You can join the Carpcast Extra for £35 for one whole year, which will give you at least one special extra content per month, which is full of well-known anglers. We've just finished our cycle of the previous group of anglers. Previous group was Kevin Nash, Alan Blair, John McAllister, Ronnie DeGroot, Frank Warwick. Did I say Daryl Peck? Daryl Peck. We had that group of anglers. We asked them a series of questions that generated stories from them, and then we split it over, I think, was it four extras?
I think we're up to four or five.
Yeah. So we've concluded that in the last Carpcast Extra last month. Like I say, you've got access to all these if you pay the £35 a year. If you just want to buy the package of those, that group of anglers, you can now do so on the shop, which is if you go to the merchandise section of thecarpcast.com. I think it's $14.99 for at least 10, somewhere between 10 and 14 hours of content, I think. Maybe longer if there's five of them. I can't remember how many there were now. But it's a way of supporting the show. It's a way of keeping this weekly podcast free. You'll get a download link where you can download all of those extra contents. Like I say, or you can pay the £35 and you'll just be able to get access to the extra section on the website and be able to get them as we put them up there. We do pop extra things in there as well. Julian Cundiff's rig talk and his fantastic talk he did live on the Carpcast Social, that's up on there as well in the extra section. So there are a few extra bits as well, and obviously we'll add stuff as it becomes relevant. So yeah, £35 a year, or you can just buy that bundle for $14.99. and obviously we're in 3 or 4 months time, when we've finished the same questions for the next group of anglers, then we'll put that up as a bundle as well. You can buy the merch clothing on there as well. You can buy the Carpcast Give Us t-shirt. You can buy the Knowledge set of DVDs. I think it's $14.99 for 2 DVD set that I made a few years back, which people seem to like. Somebody bought one last week and sent me a message saying he loved them. Beanie hats, hoodies, just ways that you can support this show and like I say, help keep this weekly. www.thecarpcast.com is the place to go and do that. Moving on, what else we got, Mark?
We've got quite a few listeners' questions. Are you ready to dive in?
Yeah, I've seen a load, actually. If you do want to ask us a question, we will get round to them all. I mean, there's four or five coming this week, so I'm not saying they're going to be immediately, but I've seen a few good ones come in over the last week or two, so...
I think
let's do one of them then.
Ask us a question.
Yeah, we'll start with the first one, and I'm going to break this one down as I'm reading through it, because there's a couple of points I want to reply to. It says, Neville Clayton says, just listened to Mark Holmes' interview, all fantastic, open brackets, on paper, close brackets, about pH, esters, feeding liquids, blah, blah, blah. On paper, Neville, have you not seen what Mark Holmes caught last year? It's a little bit more than on paper.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Back to the question. He mentions relevance and keeping it relevant a lot. How is esters and feeding the ultimate in the matrix with liquids relevant when struggling? All well and good, what happens when you've been blanking for 3 days and spirits are dejected, or do the media seem to neglect this?
I don't really understand the question.
Yeah, I think that's just five lines of negativity.
How is esters and feeding the ultimate in the matrix with liquids relevant when struggling? I mean,
of course it's relevant. Use it right and you ain't going to be struggling.
Well, I think when you're struggling, that's the exact time to try something different. You know,
yeah,
when you're struggling, that's when you're looking at something. I mean, let's look at reasons why you struggle. So, why do lakes fish tough at times? Lakes fish tough when the conditions are not great. You know, when the weather's not fantastic, you get, you know, we saw it on Elstow 2 many years ago when, you know, it was high pressure on a deep lake and the fish were just dolphin out of the water and the lake didn't do a bite for nearly 2 months.
Yeah.
that was, you know, with the same half dozen people fishing every week, it just fished hard. Now, some
but
methods...
We'll say during that period, it was a long blank. The fishing was a struggle, but nowhere were spirits dejected.
No, but I mean, you know, it does get, especially when you're fishing low stock waters, it does get you when it's not, you know, I mean, it's the difference is if everybody else is catching and you're not, that's when it gets to you. Because you're obviously doing something wrong or not doing something you could be doing. I mean, back in those days, knowing what we know now about zigs, I mean, that would have been a method that maybe would have picked fish up in those conditions, you know, an adjustable zig banged out there in the middle, may well have picked up fish. It was just something we weren't kind of aware of 14, 15 years ago. But at the end of the day, when you're struggling, that's when you want to be trying stuff that's different. If you can cloud the water with liquids and create all that feed and attraction in there, that could be the difference. But I think when you're struggling, that's the exact time to do something different. I think it's also a method on pressured lakes, you know, where you know, it's a bit of a rat race. Maybe it is well stocked, but it's just something, you know, I mean, using liquids in PVA bags has always been a method. So yeah, I don't really know, but you know, as Neville says, when you've been blanking for 3 days and spirits are dejected, I mean, I don't actually see the relevance of liquids to his point. He's basically saying, what do you do when you're blanking for 3 days? Well, you try something different. You try different colour hook baits. You try liquids. You try zigs. You try, you know, different spots. I mean, and sometimes lakes just don't fish well, you know.
Yeah. And I just want to answer his final point where he says, oh, do the media seem to neglect this? And no, they certainly don't.
Everybody struggles, you know, including people in the media.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I read not as much as I used to, but I do read quite a few magazines. And, you know, regular people are commenting on struggling, but then they're telling you how they turned it round, what they can do when you're struggling.
I said, well, the thing is, I mean, nobody would buy a magazine that was full of stories of people blanking. I mean, at the end of the day, you get the story when they have a long blank and then they catch a few fish. So, you know, obviously the things that you read in magazines are success stories. I mean, that's obviously, that's the way it goes. So, but everybody blanks, you know. I mean, probably the most successful and famous angler of all time, Terry Hearn. I've seen him, witnessed him blanking weeks and weeks and weeks, but he always catches them in the end, you know. But at the end of the day, he can be out of the news for a couple of years, and when he catches a big fish, you forget that you haven't seen him in a magazine for the last 2 years, you know. And that's because he'd probably been struggling like we all do, you know. He did 60 blank nights on St. Ives for his first carp, but his first carp was the big one. So, you know, then he was in the press, but you think, oh, it was only 3 or 4 months ago I saw him with the big one out of Yateley or a big one out of wherever. But you forget that he's probably done 60 nights in between that, you know, which is, you know, a year, 2 years fishing for most people. So everybody blanks, even the best. You know, but getting dejected, well, I don't just go fishing to catch fish, ironically as it sounds. You know, I go fishing because it's nice to be out. It's nice to be fishing. It's nice to have that excitement, anticipation, social with your mates, you know, watching the sunrise and sunset, or just catching up on sleep sometimes, you know. I go fishing for all them reasons. So if I started feeling dejected just because I didn't catch a fish when I went fishing, I'd probably look at another hobby.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you. In the old saying, you know, a crap day's fishing is still better than a good day at work.
Yes, we love a cliche. We love it.
Yes. Should we move on to the next?
Yeah.
Yeah, Michael Mulvaney, or Mulvaney. You know, we should get pronunciation. I can't even pronounce pronunciations.
Pronunciation.
Pronunciation. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Answers on a
pronunciation.
Yeah, that's the one. You've got it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Michael, we'll just call him Michael.
Michael mispronunciated.
Yeah. In the past, my local club water has seen a lot of fishy krill boilies from various anglers due to word of mouth and some minor baiting campaigns. Not loads of success, but some. A few of us were thinking about starting to introduce a different bait. What do you think? Stay with the fish meals or change it?
Ask us a question.
We need a bait expert for this, but I mean, fish meals are tried and tested, have all the nutrition that carp need, And are always working. I don't think the base is wrong. I mean, got mentioning Mark Holmes Holmes again, you know, and he's talking about live baiting for carp and stuff, and I've heard many stories of carp being cut open and the bellies are full of fry and small fish. Fish eat other fish. It's got all the nutritional stuff in that a fish needs. Going back to probably one of the most successful baits of all times was the S-Mix from Nash, which is basically a squid-based mix. Now, there have been many versions of that bait. That bait has never blown anywhere. Anyway, it works. It seems to work forever. But all Gary Bays would do was just tweak it. You know, he'd change the flavour. You know, there was the Scopex squid. You had the Tangy squid. I had my own version, which was banana and salt. There've been a number of versions of, he's added Robin Red in it for the red squid. There's been a lot of different versions of that bait. But the base mix never changed. It just always worked. You know, it was fantastic mix. So tweaking things, certainly. Going for a complete change. I mean, fish meals are always going to work. I'm bang up for changing it. What Gary used to say to me was he has a lot of people out testing for him. You know, he's got his inner group of people that even, you know, most of the Nash guys are not in this inner group, but he's got an inner group of people that he trusts, and they test his baits for him on various lakes, and they know their results. They know what they should be catching. They know the difference tweaking a bait. If he alters something slightly, you know, they report back to him with the information. And the conclusion that he came to from a lot of that is, so let's say the Scopex squid is catching all, you know, it's catching 10 fish a week per angler on this particular lake. It'd be constant for like a few weeks, months, however long the period of time was. Then he'd change it slightly. He'd maybe just tweak the flavouring. So he'd maybe, you know, like I say, change it to peach instead of Scopex, but everything else the same. He said maybe the new one would catch 12 fish a week and the original would catch 8 fish a week. So then you'd run the new version of it for X amount of time. And then if you reverted back to the old one, that would outfish the new one. Or if you introduced a totally different one with exactly the same base mix, just tweak the flavouring slightly, that one would be the one that was preferred for a little while. Then if you didn't use the original one for a little bit, that one would outfish the one that they've seen. So what that's basically saying is change works, but you don't need to change much. I think you need to keep the constant and just tweak it. And a tweak will outfish the dated version. But then when they've got used to that, just introducing the dated version will outfish the new one. So it's basically, yeah, I think it's a good idea to tweak it. That's kind of what I've learned from what he's saying, but I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't try and what's the cliched saying I'm looking for?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Is that the one?
That's one of them. It was something about a round wheel. We don't need to make a round wheel square. I forget whatever the same was. But anyway, certainly tweak. But it might be just as simple as, altering the sweetness levels or changing the flavour slightly. All the Frank Warwick interviews we've had, he's got some wicked tips for tweaking stuff and dipping hook baits and stuff like that. Again, could be introducing the liquids, dipping everything. You know, coating everything in there. But yeah, I wouldn't change from what's working. If it's had a lot of fish meals and some baiting campaigns, stick to that, but just make it unique.
Yeah, can't add too much more to that other than you mentioned krill. There is quite a few different krill baits on the market. I'm sat behind one now that's give me 3 bleeps. I'm still waiting to do a penning and actually catch one.
We need to get Adam back, actually, don't we? We do need to get him back on the podcast. We've got a long list of guests here that are upcoming. We've got a busy month recording the people for the new Carpcast Extras. I won't ruin who's on just yet. But they are coming. Let's do one more question, because we've got Hughes News coming up. Rob Hughes' monthly catch up with all things England, BT Sports, and everything else. Rob's coming up shortly. Tell you what, always interests me is, like, you're on the bank now. Is there anything on the bank that you would not want to be without? Other than, obviously,
Jaffa cakes.
Yeah. Don't leave home without Jaffa cakes. It was, it's inspired to me, mentioned him a couple of times on the show already, Roger Bacon, who do fish with quite a bit. The last time we went fishing, which was a month or two ago now, when I walked into his peg as he was setting up, he went, "Do you know what? I couldn't leave home without, so much so that if I forgot them, I'd have to go back and get them." And I was like, "What? Why is it?" And he went, "My reading glasses. I can't see." Like, he doesn't wear glasses, but he's obviously getting on a bit now. And he's like, "I couldn't tie rigs or anything without reading glasses." It's a sign of old age. Younger people listen to this are going, "Oh, I won't need them." I mean, I do wear glasses but I'm short sighted, so I need glasses for like fish spotting or driving the car or whatever. So I couldn't leave home without, without my glasses. I wouldn't want to go fishing without it, but I could still see to do everything. I just wouldn't be able to spot as many fish. But Roger was saying he physically couldn't fish. He doesn't think anymore if he didn't have his reading glasses. You know, for doing all the fiddly stuff. Or whatever. But when we did all the interviews for the previous Carpcast, when I spoke to Daryl Peck, to be honest, it was a reoccurring theme. I spoke to both Daryl and Johnny. I spoke to John Mack. John Mack basically said he couldn't leave home without his phone. In fact, let's get John Mack on. He can tell you himself.
Something I might go home for, basically, if I've forgotten it, the item of tackle that I won't leave home without, basically, is probably, I know it's not even an item of tackle, but it's something I've got to have, is my phone. I love sitting on my phone at the lake. I like being on Facebook, chatting to my mates, and emails, etc., you know, especially, you know, what with the way things are going at the minute with my own business and that. But, I like my battery power pack, my phone. And I tell you what, I was fishing a little while ago and I had a 240-amp battery in the back of the van. It weighs a ton. My battery power pack ran out and I was down the lake for a few days. My little power pack was no good, so I got my barrel and I done a trip back to the van and put this 240-amp battery on it. Took it all the way to the to my bivvy. And I sat there with this thing and it's like half the size of the bonnet of your car in my by the head end of my bed chair, just so I could be on my phone. I mean, I love being on Facebook, chat to people. You know, it's like I'm sitting up till 3, 4, whatever. I'm up all night, mate, when I'm fishing, even this time of year. And in the depths of winter, I love my little my bit of whatever you call it, me connection with the outside world. Things have changed, mate.
It's a lot easier now fishing, isn't it, with smartphones. You know, you can watch live TV on them, you can listen to podcasts like the Carpcast, you can keep in touch with people, just nose at the world, can't you? Like them nights are a lot shorter now, aren't they, with a phone, a mini computer, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, night fishing in the winter doesn't bother me, the long nights, people go all the nuts for it. Yeah, bring it on, because some reason I go the other way. I get more excited the nights get longer, and there's more to do, there's more going on, there's more to stay awake for, and there's more fish showing at night, and yeah, it's all going on in the winter, mate, at night, everyone else is at home, so yeah, I like my phone though.
Just a quick word from John there. But when I spoke to Daryl and Frank Warwick, they both had the same item of tackle that they wouldn't live without. And I'm the same now because I'm lazy. In fact, I'll tell you afterwards. Let's get Frank in first and see what he's got to say.
Stuff I wouldn't leave home without. Well,
Since Jag have done those sharpening files and the eyepiece and the little vices and all that, it's become quite trendy to sharpen hooks. But me being an old bugger, I'm old school, really, because, as I say, I've been carp fishing for 46 years now. And I remember the old Leandor carp hooks we used to have, and, you know, the partridge hooks and... Jack Hilton's, they were all... Yeah, you'd laugh at them now. You'd laugh at them and go, how did they ever catch fish on this? They were crap. They were absolutely rubbish. And so I got a Gerber sharpening file. It's for fly fishing and sea fishing, they use them. And I've been sharpening my hooks from as long as I can remember. I mean, mostly, I used to use them, you know, I'd sharpen them to start with, but when you're catching a lot of fish, you might be in a situation where you're running out of time and you want to get the rod back in. So what I'd do was, rather than put a fresh rig on because I wanted to get back in, I'd just get my gerber out and sharpen up the hook and get the point back to how it should be. And consequently, I used that thing up until I got some of them Jag ones recently. I used it for... must have been 30 years, and the diamond, you know, the diamond dust on it, I'd used it that much that it was smooth. It was absolutely smooth. There was no diamond on it anymore. It was that knackered, but it must have sharpened thousands of hooks for me. And I think it's the one thing that is super crucial that you have to take more care about than anything, virtually, because it's the main thing that's doing the business. Apart from your bait and your rig, it's the one thing that needs that care and attention, so it is worth paying massive detail to it. And I suppose the other thing that I wouldn't leave home without is a cooker. The reason being, I have this quirky old thing whereby I think that humans have got smell on their hands. If you were hunting deer and they smelt you and you were upwind of them and the smell of you came down, they'd go. You wouldn't be able to shoot them. So we're hunting, basically. So if the smell of your hands... Some people smell more than others as well. So you're handling your hook baits whilst you're naturally tying your rigs up. You're handling your hook baits quite a lot. And the smell of a human, especially when you've been on a session for 3 or 4 days, isn't going to be great, is it? If your hygiene's not like... You're not showering every day and you're not cleaning your hands. So there's a smell of scent of you, you know, because people touch themselves, they scratch their arse or do whatever, and then there's that smell of you, and then you touch your hook baits. Not really great. So what I do is, before I cast out, I have a kettle of boiling water, and quite simply, I put my hook bait in it and my rig and sterilise it before I cast out. It might only be a few percent difference. But let's face it, you spend all this money, all this time, paying 30 quid a day ticket, syndicate money, and then you can't be arsed sterilising your hook baits to take it that extra dimension forward. It's ridiculous. So I pay ultra small details like that a lot of respect. So by sterilising my hook bait, I take that completely out of my mind. I mean, you imagine it. I once had this bloke say, oh, you're a nutter, you are doing that. And I says, well, hang on a minute. Let me pose a question to you. Say I gave you the choice and your life depended on it, and I gave you a sterilised hook bait, a single hook bait, that no one had touched, or else I got the other hook bait and I passed it round, say, 10 people that are on the lake currently and let them all handle it. Which one would you rather use? He says, well, of course, the one that's not been touched. I says, well, it's just a matter of degrees then, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you do agree with me?
Yeah, the hook sharpener. I'm the same. I can't leave home without my hook sharpener. It's maybe it's because I'm lazy and I don't have like 20 rigs pre-tied. I watched Julian when he did his talk for us on the Carpcast social, and he has his rig thingy, and you know, I see pictures of him on Facebook all the time. If he's going fishing, he's got like 20 rigs made up, and I'm just not that organized, and I don't have enough free time at home to just be able to spend, you know, evenings tying rigs. So I mean, I use a rig from I can use a rig for 3 sessions. I'm just touching it up with the sharpening kit. I used to have the Jag one, and what's the company called? Is it Hook Point? What's it called? The ones that sent me
Pinpoint Hooks.
Pinpoint Hooks, yeah. I use that one now.
I've got their gear inside of me now. Been using it this morning.
Are you the same? Do you just touch up old rigs?
To a certain extent. Yeah, once there's only 2 mil of a point left, I'll change it.
Yeah. It's just great as well in the middle of the night, you know, if you catch a fish and rather than, you know, have to tie up a new rig, it's just quick touch up with the stones or the fouls if it's a bit more blunt. And then obviously every morning when you do a recast or whatever, the hook points do tend to go over during the course of a night, don't they? When they've been in the water all night, they just round off a little bit, don't they? Just touch it up with a stone. But when we asked Daryl Peck exactly the same thing, you know, what iron of tackle would you not leave home without? He said something fairly similar. Let's let him tell you.
The best piece of item, the best item of tackle that I have bought in my angling career has to be the hook sharpener. You know, like I was always fascinated with hook sharpening and always wanted to achieve something that I thought was impossible. And having seen that article by Jason Hayward, I just remember I looked at there's a picture, like a blown up picture of his sharpened hook. I remember looking at it and just like, yes, mate, that is what it's all about. That no more by having to go to Corder and get like 30 tray packs of hooks or God knows what and sitting there going through them. You know, they all catch fish, but when you're fishing those really hard waters where every pickup, you know, you want it to count. You know, what you can do. I remember I actually had some hooks sharpened by Jason, and obviously he was doing them for a few other people, and he's obviously not doing them quite with the same love that you were doing yourself, you know, and I could even see the ones that he'd done, some were better than others, and I thought there's no good me paying him to do it, you know, I've got to master this myself, you know, I've got to have this in my locker. And I remember going to Sky Lakes with Corder filming one time, and I got there, I think, half a day before everyone else. I just sat there with a few packets of hooks, ruining loads of them, going through them. And it's just, a rig that can be ruined, I can mess around with a hook and bring it back to life rather than tie a fresh rig. And having that vice and that fight, because a lot of people see they buy the file and they don't want to spend 20 quid or 25 quid on the vice and they think they're going to hold it with a pair of forceps. And I look at them doing it, struggling, thinking, just buy the clamp, man, just buy the clamp and master that skill. And there's no doubt about it. There's so many rig variations that you can do to do things to your rigs and make them perform in different ways. But the one thing that you can guarantee will make any rig better is a hook that's sharper than what Joe Boggs is using. Probably not such an edge these days because everybody's doing it. But at the same time, I'd much rather have a sharp one than the blunt one. You know, it's about converting those pickups into hooked fish, and the finer you make that point, the more chance it has of catching hold. And the thought now, if you said, oh, you've got to go to somewhere rock hard like Yateley, like nowadays, and then turning up with out the hook, a hook out the packet, I'd be like, I might as well throw a sausage out there. Do you know what I mean?
Do you reckon somewhere like Yateley, when we were on there then, do you reckon like having that ridiculous sharpened hook, do you reckon we were getting picked up a lot by them old clever wise fish that we just didn't know about?
I don't know. Looking back, I caught them when I thought I should have done, to be fair, and there wasn't, when the opportunities weren't there, you didn't catch. But there's other times, there's an estate lake near me, like, that's about, it's not even an acre maybe, and it's got 50 carp in it, and they swim over you all day, like, and you just think, how many times are they picking that up? You know, I've seen the underwater DVD, somewhere like Linear, where they're getting fish for all the time. Those fish in those lakes are as clever as those ones that were in Yateley, you know. I honestly believe that. It's only angling pressure that makes fish difficult and more wiggy and makes them want to spit stuff out. And the fact is, a lot of, someone said to me, like I've heard it before, that people try and get their rigs to work on ejection, right? And I would, when people say that, I have a bit of a wry smile to myself, because in my mind, that's absolute garbage. In my mind, you only catch fish when they tighten the hook link. And if it's only a slight tighten, the sharper the hook, the better, the more chance it converting. And I think no matter what rig you got on, if it picks up the bait and its mouth is a filtration system for sifting in and out what it does and doesn't want, if it sucks something thinks it's got something in its mouth it doesn't want, and it manages to open its mouth and blow it out, the rig's going to come out. I think it's highly unlikely, in my opinion, that you're likely to hook a fish on ejection. I think it's much more likely that there's a form of tension in the hook link that just causes that hook point to catch.
100% agree with you there. I mean, the hook's usually backwards when it's ejected, just because of how we tie our rigs. The hook's normally facing the wrong way when they blow it out.
I just can't get my head around the fact that a fish blows the rig out and the hook just happens to catch on the way out. Even these ones, I've seen people with long D's on, where you've got a massive D from a long shank hook from the eye all the way down to the bottom of the bend, and they're using a stick hook link, and they're saying, oh, when the fish blows it out, the hook stays in its mouth and the bait goes out. That is the biggest, no, it's not happening. I'm not having it.
I agree.
Yeah, I'm not technical, but I'm not having that. You know, you could, if you believe that, great, you sit behind it and you fish that techers, but people often say to me, oh, your rigs out there really simple. They don't tangle, they go out there like that. But I've never had someone ever turn up in the next peg to me and bash the living hell out of me because they've got better technology on than I have. You know, I've had people turn up that have had different baits, you know, when they're not eating buoys and catching on tigers. I've had people that's got the right kind of pop on for the day, or they've got their little honey hole, their little hot spot. But no one's ever turned up in the next peg with some wonder rig and just started bashing me up.
Yeah. Do you think short hook links then definitely help with the fact that, you know, we usually nab them when the hook link tightens to the lead?
The thing is, with the short hook links, I think you need small bait necessarily. Just obviously, if you've got a big hook and a big boilie, the gap between obviously the depth of the boilie and the size of the hook, you need room for that to go in before the hook link tensions. So I think there's. Yeah. Say, for example, if you're using a 20mm boilie and you're using a size 4 hook or something like that, I think a 3-inch rig or something stupid like that would be very negative. I think a lot of time they'd be picking up the boilie and they'd be pulled from their lips before the hook had gone in. But I think there is a... I think that's why everyone seems really... If you look at the general sort of rig length across the board, it's probably 5 to 9 inches, somewhere in that bracket. And I think the lower end of that is probably best for the smaller baits, and the getting up to 7-8 inches is probably best, in my opinion, for the bigger baits. I'm not a mad rig person, you know. The real key for rigs for me is the hook to land ratio. If someone's rig flips over better than mine and does all that fandango stuff like that, then that's great. But if they can't land as many as I do at hook to land ratio, then I'm not interested, because I'd rather have a big fish come into my swim and manage to get away with picking up my rig with the potential to come back and pick it up again than to hook it and not to get it in.
Yeah, especially them tricky fish get caught once or twice a year and you spook it, you know, by nicking it and having it pull out. I mean, I don't lose many fish. I can count on one hand, apart from like real heavy weed and stuff, you know, where there's a reason why it's come off. But fish just dropping off and for no reason. I know people that they use weird and wonderful rigs, you know, like really bent round withies and, you know, really technical rigs, and they maybe get more bites, but they lose a lot of fish. And I don't want to lose a fish. Like, when I've got that fish on, there's nothing more sickening than having it drop off, especially if you're fishing a big fish water, where you're fishing for something that you might spend a lot of time, effort, thought, power, money, and to have that bite and have it drop off, it'd kill me. It's why I don't like chods much, because you do have a few drop off.
You find people, when they go to somewhere difficult and they start to struggle, they immediately start questioning the stuff that's served them so well in all the years gone by, and that's when things go wrong, when you're using something that you've not fine-tuned to work for you in the way that it does. You know, if you use something on a 20 water and you land everything you hook on it, and you take it to a big fish water, you're going to do the same. You know, it doesn't change just because you're fishing for bigger fish. As long as it's reliable, it'll be reliable, whether it's small, big or medium-sized fish, you know.
Do enjoy listening to Frank. If you enjoyed those little clips there from Frank and from Daryl, that's pretty much what's just happened in the Carpcast Extra. There's 4 or 5 episodes of similar things like that, where we've asked them questions and they give the answers. They were just a couple of odd ones that we thought we'd slip into the normal show.
just kind of extra. But yeah, stories from Frank, from Daryl, from all the other people we mentioned earlier on www.thecarpcast.com. Did you say there was another couple of questions as well,
Mark? Ask us a question.
Yeah, there is just a, you know, a couple of quick ones. And Alan Williams, he says, are Syndicate Waters an escape from the riffraff of Day Ticket Lakes? Yes.
Yes, that's exactly what they are. I mean, you can get some really busy, stressful syndicates. I've fished on a few that are a little bit of a rat race, but they are not the rat race of Day Ticket Lakes. You know, Day Ticket Lakes, like the difference between Syndicate and Day Ticket Lakes is a degree of etiquette. You know, that they're, when you're on a Day Ticket Lake, like you can get arguments over water boundaries, you know, like the water that one particular swim gets as opposed to the next swim. And like when you're on the Syndicate and you're seeing the same people week in, week out, like the lines are kind of drawn, you know, everyone knows, right, you're allowed to fish to that tree or that mark there or that whatever, and everybody, because it's the same group of people fishing week in, week out, once the lines in the sand are drawn, kind of thing, everybody knows. In our Day Ticket, when you've got a different group of people coming every week, like, it's, you know, that's one of the main issues, isn't it, with Day Ticket Lakes. Or, you know, and quite often on Syndicate Lakes, people will leave a gap if you know, certain pegs, like someone's in that peg, there's no point going in X peg because it covers a similar sort of water. So whereas on Day Ticket Lakes, somebody would just go in it. If it's an empty peg, they'd just go in. Yeah, basically, I've never really fished too many Day Ticket Lakes, bar maybe Cromwell, because Cromwell is very much like a Syndicate water. It fishes like a Syndicate water. The peg boundaries are marked out and everybody knows. But it's one of the more syndicate-y type Day Ticket Lakes. It's very hard for somebody else to mess your fishing up. I mean, there are some great Day Ticket Lakes out there, and some lakes that have some really sensible rules to stop. You know, we've mentioned Eric's Willows has got some great rules, you know, stuff like you're not allowed to cast in before a certain time in the morning. You can get there early, you can pick your peg, you can get your kit out, you know, get everything ready, but you're not allowed to cast in. Like, because one of the worst things, let's say you've only got 48 hours, you're fishing on a Day Ticket Lake, and you know, you're on your final morning, it's your last chance to catch a fish. We know that first light is kind of prime time. You've got your rod sorted from the night before. You've had fish showing over you. So you've paid £50 maybe to fish for two nights. It's the second night, everything's sorted. And at first light in the morning, there's a guy set up, you know, in the next peg, 5 yards down, is spotting a marker in at 7 a.m. and messed up your last chance, you know. Messed up 50% of the bite time on your trip, really, if most of the takes are coming at first light. And then, you know, you've got two chances basically on a 48-hour session, and on the second of them, somebody's leading around and markering right by your spot at first light. They're doing nothing wrong, you know, that they're fishing their 48 hours that they paid for. There's a much right to do it, but it doesn't help you, does it? So, you know, like, I know Willows has got that rule in specifically for that situation. I think it's fantastic. I think all Day Tickets should have that rule. You know, you're not allowed to cast in before 11 a.m. You can still get sorted and tie all your rigs and set your bivvy up and whatever, but you're just not allowed to mess somebody else's fishing up. But some Day Ticket Lakes are run fantastically. Some are just kind of, they take the money and it's a free-for-all. And they're the ones that are stressful. So, yeah, you don't kind of get those things on the syndicate. You can get some difficult syndicate members that don't make things easy for the rest of the syndicate. We have mentioned some of those in the past, haven't we? One springs to mind that's probably springing to your mind right now.
Well, about three, to be honest, but now they're far outweighed by the decent etiquette abiding people on the syndicates. And
yeah, well, I find the syndicates, the downside to syndicates is if you've got a group of anglers that have fished that lake for years and years and years and years, on the syndicate, they tend to be a bit protective over it. They don't like the new members, so you kind of get a clique, like the you know, the old school clique that's on the syndicate. I mean, that does happen. You know, it's a little bit territorial You know, I've, as somebody who's travelled around the country many times over the years, joining syndicates, you know, I've fallen victim to that. Not always had, you know, when you've met resistance to being on lakes, I've probably not always dealt with it in the easiest going way. You know, it's a bit a kind of, well, I've got the same rights as you, as opposed to being a, you know, less naive. But you know, that's been my own issues. Not, but you just got to accept that does happen. You know, if you go and join a syndicate in a different part of the country, and you've got, you know, 75% of the syndicators have caught the fish five times each, you know, over and over again each season. It's just their local lake that they fish. They're not always welcoming to new people, especially keen new people that are on there and want to fish all the time, even though you've paid your money same as them and you've got just as much right. So it's a bit of negotiating, navigating to do on certain syndicates, but generally it's fine.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would take...
The best thing to do if you join a syndicate with a clique,
yeah,
make sure your first fish is a 40. I've done that twice. They always have to make friends and influence people.
Yeah, as I've said many, many times, I never had an issue in carp fishing for 25, 30 years. Never had an issue with a single angler until I caught a 40. All of a sudden, the knives come out. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, syndicates all day for me. I mean, there's some fantastic day ticket waters around, and we've been fishing them. And, you know, I'm going to probably one of the most stressful day ticket waters around is the Kingfisher Bluebell Swan complex of lakes.
But what a fish they have in there.
Exactly. I'm still going to fish them this year, stress or not. You know, I'm still going to do it just because of what's in there. But yeah. Syndicates all day long. What's the last one?
The last one will do. It's I think it's a pretty short answer, this one. James Mitchell. He says, what are your views on carp getting themselves caught to de-rig themselves? Do you think they would go out of their way to enable them to be unhooked from the annoying pain in their lip? But basically, if you know, a carp is you know, he's towing a rig around that's been cracked off or snapped on them, would they go and get themselves caught on purpose so they can get rid of it?
That's an interesting question, actually. What do you think?
Ask us a question.
I think he's crediting carp with way too much intelligence. Even a carp that's towing a rig around is going to eat sooner or later, therefore putting itself at risk of getting caught.
Yeah, I've fished lakes where I've caught a fish and that it's got three rigs in it. I have done that.
Were they your rigs?
Not my rigs, no. But I, you know, I've caught a fish and it's got multiple rigs in it. I've also pulled in trailers that have got a couple of rigs in it. I kind of see what he's getting at. I agree with you that I don't think they are that clever. What I think is that let's say a carp's mouth. Well, first of all, I don't think it's an annoying pain in the lip. I think it's a hindrance to him swimming about with stuff obviously hanging off him. That's obviously going to be annoying. I'm not sure it's a pain like they I've got to get rid of this. Carp are generally quite good at getting rid of rigs, especially if the hook's barbless. They can 100% get rid of it really easy. But I actually think that maybe let's say a carp's mouth with no rigs in it, it's got full sensitivity all the way round. You know, they're extremely versatile with their mouth. They can, you know, their mouth's operating at 100% efficiency for sucking in food, for blowing out stuff, for you know, trying not to get caught, to feed without getting caught. They're operating at 100% efficiency. If they've got three or four rigs trailing out their mouth, I think it just cuts down their efficiency. You know, they're not, it desensitizes them maybe. So I think when they get caught, you know, trailing a load of rigs, it's not because they wanted to get caught just specifically to get rid of the rigs so that you take them out. I don't think they could ever think like that. I just think it's maybe they get caught more often because they're just less efficient at not getting caught because, you know, of all this stuff sticking out of their mouth.
Interesting thought, that not something that crossed my mind. I just thought it was a, you know, a coincidence, and you know, somehow could something with a brain the size of a boilie
think like that. But,
yeah, I don't think they think, oh, there's these humans on the bank that are going to help me out if you know, if I get caught. I just think they're just not as good at getting away with it because, you know, they've got stuff hindering their senses, and their senses are all in their mouth, aren't they? It's what they use to smell, yeah, to taste, to feel. You know, when you see a fish suck stuff in and filter inside the mouth and blow the crap out and keep the food, you know, their mouths are very efficient. I just don't think they're as efficient if they've got three or four rigs in it. As to why they may have three or four rigs in it, that's a different question. Again, you only really tend to see it on day ticket lakes, that kind of situation. You'll get a trailer on the syndicate lake, but quite often people will know what fish it is. You know, if so-and-so lost a fish, you know, on the syndicate, everyone seems to know about stuff, don't they? You know, you generally share the information, you know, that so-and-so had four fish and lost one, you know, to a cutoff or whatever, and everybody knows there's a fishwoman about that's trailing a bit of line, and, you know, quite often people will be will be reporting it. Yeah, I had it coming through my lines last night, and until somebody manages to get hold of it and remove the rig. But it's obviously more common on day ticket lakes where probably people are using less efficient equipment, they're not fishing as regular, so maybe the line's a bit tired, frayed or whatever, and, you know, there's more fish lost on a day ticket lake than there is on an average syndicate.
Yep, I'd have to say it. So what's next? Yeah.
Let's get Rob Hughes in. Let's do our Hughes News.
Hughes News.
So back with this monthly instalment of Hughes News, Mr. Rob Hughes, how are we doing, pal?
Yeah, very well, thank you, Jake, but forgive me, I'm driving at the moment. Hands-free and safely, of course, in case anybody's out there thinking, how's he doing that? So, all systems go. I had a lovely queue this morning on the way up. Anyone follows me on Facebook will know that I love a queue, and I always seem to get stuck in them. And an hour and a half this morning it took me to get to the motorway, which is 22 miles.
Wow.
Yeah. Lovely. Crowy made a very good point that resonated with me. He saw the Facebook post and he actually commented, imagine in the future when you look back and you see the 2 years of your wasted life living in queues. Live local, fish local, enjoy local. And you know what? I make him right because, you know, I do a hell of a lot of travelling for generally everything. And the amount of time that you waste doing it, but thinking about the fishing side of things, I moan that there isn't really that much good fishing by me. But there is, they're just not that big. Does it really matter, Jay?
No.
Does it really matter?
No.
So, you know, when you look what Crowy's done, Yorkshire, I won't say wasn't on the map, but nobody really paid any attention to it because everybody thought there aren't that many fish in Yorkshire. The locals knew, but nationally it was like, oh, it's north, there's not many fish up there. And when you look at how successful Crowy's been over the last few years and the fish that he catches, you know, you think, blimey, there's a lot of fish up there, actually.
And, yeah,
you know, he's caught virtually everything. See that one he had the other day, the two fish in a pond?
Yeah.
50 years old, and it doesn't take him long. It really doesn't.
No, I mean, they're getting bigger everywhere. We have this conversation regularly, you know, there's probably as many 60s now as there was 50s, seven, 8 years ago, and there's, you know, there was as many 50s then as what there was 40s, probably, you know, 15, 16 years ago when I first started tracking 40s down. I mean, it's all relative. I mean, people naturally, if you read magazines and tales of catching 40 pounders and you live in Cumbria where, you know, the county record's 36 pound or something, I know it's a bit more now, but it used to be, there's a natural desire to want to travel, you know, they are a bit bigger everywhere. I mean, you know, I travelled for 10 years before I made it a BMO bonnet to catch a Lancashire 40, which is the home county where I lived in. It took me a number of years and one of the most satisfying captures I've ever had to this date, but it, you know, it's horses for courses. Yorkshire, it's had 40 pounders years ago. It's pretty close to Lincolnshire, which back in the Rod Hutchinson Carp Strikes Back days had some big fish around, you know, relative to the rest of the country. And it's still only like an hour and a half from sort of Cambridgeshire, you know, it's 100 miles from Bedfordshire, Cambridgeshire, so it ain't too bad on that side of the country. You try living in Carlisle and see where your nearest 30 pounder or 40 pounder now is.
You know, I'm One of the most inspirational shows, and this might embarrass you a little bit now, one of the most inspirational shows that I've seen, and I've seen an awful lot of shows, either comparing them, hosting them, being part of them. When I used to run the Carp Society, we used to have a lot of people up. And one of the most inspirational shows that I've seen was yours that you did at the Northern Angling Show, where you were talking about the fish that you caught locally. Yeah. And you've had everything up in the Northwest. You know, when you look at Colmere, when you look at, obviously, you know, the big commons that we're not allowed to name, et cetera, all of those. And you think, blimey, there are decent fish around if you make the effort to go for them. It's just the effort level it takes to fish for those fish is a lot harder than the effort it takes to get in a car and travel down south. And this is why, you know, initially, Crowe used to say, oh, I'm fishing in Yorkshire now for ages. I'm not interested in travelling, because obviously when you're coming out, it's like, not interested in it, kids are growing up, want to be by then, fishing in Yorkshire. I used to think, what is there in Yorkshire? But you look at it and you think, blimey, there's a lot if you can make the effort. And, you know, when you look at the A-listers that you've had at the Northwest, I don't know many Northwest anglers that are as successful as you've been at catching those really, really big fish. So, you know, fair dues to you.
Thanks, Rob.
What I will say is, you try living in the bloody Southwest. I thought moving south would be all right, but coming towards the Southwest, that generally, you know, there's one or two venues that are popping up now that have got a few, but there isn't an awful lot in the Southwest. It's another of those barrenish areas. There's loads of small man-made ponds that have got doubles, 20s, and, you know, they're coming through the likes of Coking Farmers and Big Ticket Water. Now Dorset, that's now got, I think, one, possibly two 40 pounders in it, so they're growing a little bit down there. I know Todd has got quite a few 30s in it now, but it's only really the last 5 years plus that there's been anything decent down in the Southwest too.
Yeah, yeah. How far are you from, like, the Cotswolds? That's what, like an hour or two?
On the map, I'm about an inch. when you come to drive there, I am probably, well, it's an hour and 45 minutes to get into the Cotswold Water Park.
Yeah.
So it's just where I live. It's just the roads now. You know, I'm a northwestern lad. I'm from Oswestry. People know it, on the borders of Wales. The roads around there aren't great, but the traffic down on the place that I am at the moment is ridiculous. And you just seem to get stuck all the time. And even a short journey, it takes ages to get to. So that thought, if you're anything like me, I just have to be by water. I want to go for a walk around water, even if I'm not fishing. If I can walk around it all the time, then that just keeps my mojo going. But just to go down to a pond to either bait up or for a look around, you're looking realistically at an hour and a half in traffic to go down, bait up, and then get back again. Add your half an hour that you want to be there, ideally the hour that you want to be there watching the water, and you've got 2.5 hours. That's a whole evening or more just to go and see water or bait up. It's a shame. If you're a trout angler by me, it's amazing. You know, we've got the Wiley, we've got the Avon, we've got the fly, all the fly stuff, all if you're into chalk stream fishing, then probably New Zealand would be the best place to live. But after that, it would be where I live, because it's great. You know, it's limestone everywhere and there's loads of chalk streams and trout throwing themselves out all over the place. But I've never really been interested.
So you are well-travelled internationally and all over the UK, as we see from the driving pictures and stuff. But you've just been away with England again, haven't you?
Yes. It was... it was absolutely brilliant. Once again, as ever, I'll say thank you to the guys at home for the support that we got back. I did the little films on Facebook. It was a Six Nations competition. It was an official event, so it was run by the French official governing body, the official French team, the official Dutch team, the official Italian team, Lithuania and Ukraine, plus us were there. So Six Nations were there. It was run on a friendly basis, which meant that, you know, we could let a few more lads have a bit of a run out. It wasn't a team event in the extent that you had to have the three perfect teams in, but it was a sort of every man for himself, but with teams in it as well. So I took the whole squad out there, more or less, just to let them have a cap, let them have a run out. Obviously, we've got some new guys in. I wanted to mix the pairings up a little bit. So rather than putting everybody with who they would normally be with, I shuffled the pack just to keep them on their toes a little bit, and I want to see how they perform individually. So it was absolutely brilliant. We got over there, quite a different water to what we normally fish. It's a big lake, 500 acres. It's the lake that the World Championships is going to be held on, so it's Bourdon in France. And the French there are clearly immensely strong. wrong. The French team this year, they are selected from the French Championships, which took place last year. And the French Championships took place on Bourdon last year. So the team that's got in has won on that event and has won on that venue and has fished that event under competition situations now three times. So they clearly know what they're doing, and that's a massive advantage. It's their home venue as well. So we always knew that we were going to be up against it. You know, when we go into these things, of course, I want to win and all the lads want to win. That's what we do it for. But at the same time, you have to be very aware that if you're going away to a tough game, you've got to play a slightly different game to what you normally play. And without any shadow of a doubt, when we went out to the World Championships in Spain, my idea was that we'll play a Real Madrid game. We'll score as many goals as we possibly can and try and let everyone catch up with us. This one we had to play a little bit differently because the French were clearly going to be the strength. And we almost played an Arsenal game there where you sort of close down the opposition and try and beat them on the break. And in fishing terms, that is, don't go crazy. Sit back a little bit. We had a game plan. We didn't know whether or not it would work, but we had to be very aware of what everyone else was doing. And the long and short of it, Jay, is that the initial game plan that we went in on didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And it took us probably 9 or 10 hours of trying our initial game plan to realise that, firstly, it wasn't working as well as it should have worked, and secondly, that the French, who were the home nation, clearly were working very well, and they were just stretching the legs against us. So it was a brilliant opportunity for us to see how adaptable we can be. So we adapted, we changed, we effectively did more or less the same tactics as the French were doing and played catch-up. But not only did we catch them up, we called them up and passed them. And obviously, if you've seen the result, then you'll see that there were two sections and we had a first in each section. Overall, we got four teams in the top 10. We effectively won it overall as a team, and individually Billy and Jamie won overall, with Chris and Tom Maker second. So there was also a prize for the biggest fish, which interestingly went to Billy and Jamie. So there were six prizes on offer and English teams took five of them.
Wow. What were the tactic changes? What was it that was the key?
Yes, I will say, because it will be, I'm not going to go into exact details because you never know who's listening, but the long and short of it is that we went over with a game plan that involved distance.
Right.
And it became apparent very, very quickly that the fish went at distance, they were shallow.
Right.
And because they were shallow, we had to change our plans from fishing a long game to fishing a short game, and rather than fishing a bait-up game and waiting for the fish and building a swim, we had to nick them out of the edge.
Right.
Now, that's alien to an awful lot of the lads that fish in my squad, because a lot of them are long-range casters, they're long-range anglers, and they like bagging up.
Mm.
And to go from the plan of, let's go out and fish, build a swim and catch a lot of fish over the top of it, you know, the typical Oxford style, put a lot of bait in, fish two or three rods on it and catch. They then had to almost go to stalking tactics or close-range bite tactics. And if I was to tell you that, in my peg in particular, we were catching fish at two rod lengths.
Wow.
Then, you know, that's a massive, massive difference. But, you know, you need to be adaptable. One of the guys said, it was a bit of a laugh, but I didn't come here to fish 30 yards, I come here to fish 130 yards. And
yeah.
The answer to that is, no, you come here to catch as many fish as you can to and beat the opposition. And if the fish are 6 foot out, then you fish 6 foot out. And what it showed me was that, technically, I think we've got the best squad in the world, because we can do it as good as, if not better, than anybody else.
Yeah.
What we need to do is we need to work out what it is.
Yeah.
And as soon as we know what it is, then it's game on.
We've got the best angles.
And this was
it.
A perfect example of that. Yeah, you know, we weren't doing it, and the it was fishing short with a certain type of tactic and a certain type of bait that I'm not going to say about, but it was those things that actually caught the fish. And then what you need is, you need courage, you need conviction, and you need to dig deep and keep doing it. And you know what it's like, and I'll use the anglers listening to this, let me give you an absolute prime example. Zigrig fishing, and I know that we've talked about this time and time and time again on this show and how effective it can be. Forget whether or not they count or not, but let's have a look at, you know what, I'm blanking. I've tried everything. I even chucked a zig out. So immediately by saying that you even chucked a zig out, that tells me that you've not been fishing it effectively. And when we scratch the surface a little bit more and find out how long you fished a zig, you might have put one out 6 foot below the surface for 2 hours, not caught on it, and you wrote it off. Now, at this time of year, zig rigs will work, unquestionably, because the fish are in the upper layers of the water. It hasn't warmed all the way through yet, although it's getting close. So those fish are going to be up there, top third or thereabouts. You don't need to prove your bait because you know that zigs work. Black foam is what you need to do, and you need to fish it 3 to 4 foot under the surface. All that you've got to look at then is location, and actually location, they'll find you. You don't need to worry about your spot. You don't need to worry about your bait. You don't need to worry about baiting up. You just need that single bait there in the right place. But if you haven't done it before, it takes courage and conviction to do it and the technical ability to do it properly. And that's effectively what happened with the squad here, where it's like, right, get away from what you know. Get away from what you do. This is how we're going to fish. This is what we're going to do. Everybody draw the rods in. This is the way you're going to fish it. And this is the tactic that you're going to do. Stick with it. Yeah. And when it doesn't work for 12 hours, the bottom lip wobbles a bit and you just think, oh God, it's not working. I'm going to go back out and I'm going to do what I know. But actually, that was not going to work. And quite frankly, and I'll be honest with it now, the reason it wasn't going to work was because the water temperature was very cold in the deeper water further out. The fish were all in the edge because of that shallower water, because of the warming effect of the sun. And it was clear that it doesn't matter how good you are, if you were fishing more than 20 foot deep, you weren't going to catch anything because the carp went in there.
Yeah.
And the clever anglers picked that up early, whereas guys that don't understand how water works, particularly don't understand how natural lakes work, they were a little bit slower to pick it up. And there were a number of teams that really, really struggled over there. And, you know, not just English, lots of other nations, but you need to understand the watercraft element. And, you know, I took lessons from this. And the positive lesson I took from it is that England, technically, when they know what to do, are absolutely mustard. They can do it technically as good as, if not better than, everybody else out there. What we need to do is we need to be quicker at picking up what it is. And the second thing is that the watercraft element of fishing these natural waters in comparison with the sort of waters we fish back in the UK is massive. And we know it, but this was yet another reminder. And a lot of the guys in the UK grow up on what I will call unnatural fishing. And your old school and the old school guys that will be out there listening to this will understand it. The new school guys might not understand it. But if you were to take the carp rods away and put yourself on a matchbox, the feeder anglers or the pole anglers that used to fish on the rivers and canals were very, very good natural anglers. When commercials started out, they basically overstocked holes in the ground where the fish are conditioned by either angler behavior, overcrowding, or bait. Yep. So you can actually make a swim happen with bait, whereas on a big natural water of 500 acres with a big natural stock of fish that don't see that much angler pressure, that aren't used to that much angler pressure, and have got lots of depth and distance to get away from everyone, they're not conditioned in any way, shape, or form. So as a result, they behave naturally and they're conditioned to nature rather than man's influence. Yeah. So what you have to do is you have to find them first and then persuade them. Whereas in the commercial waters that we fish, you can do what you know works. And as long as you're doing it better than the next bloke, sooner or later, those fish are going to turn up because that's what they do, because they're pressured to bounce around the pond and behave in the conditioned and natural way that they do behave. So, you know, it was a nice, interesting lesson to see that, because, you know, come later on in the year, there's going to be more teams to compete against and there's going to be more teams to pick that up quicker. And also, you know, to be fair, the back end of the year, it's going to be a very, very different competition to the one at the front end of the year. But equally, you know, when we spoke about going out there, I said it'll be quite a nice recce. We can go out, we can have a look, we can see what the other teams are doing. It'll be a nice opportunity for us to go and stretch the carbon a little bit and use it as a recce. And one of the lads, it was Jamie that actually made the comment, and he said, look, it ain't been funny, but I don't really want to go there just to stretch the carbon and have a look at it. I want to go there to win. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, yeah, you know what, England aren't going anywhere to lose. We're going to go there to win. If we don't win, then fair enough. But we're going to go there because we're going to win. We're not going to go and take part. And it was, you know, great, a brilliant exercise. Got to say, the French put on a wonderful show. The Italians and the Dutch, great. Well, all of the teams were there, Lithuania and Ukraine as well. We had a really, really nice time. But it was lovely because, the more the boys get that winning feeling, the more they want it again. And this was quite a nice exercise that there were a couple of them that were really in a corner and had to dig, and they did.
Winning is a habit as well, and you've been out twice with the team and won both times, so it is a habit.
Don't forget the girls as well, Jay. Don't forget the girls.
Of course, yeah. So yeah. We get used to winning, it's easier to keep it up, I think, because there's more pressure. I'm sure nobody get complacent, and like you say, it'd probably be very different in the autumn when you go back. That long range deep water tactics probably where they're going to be, isn't it, later in the year? I would have thought.
I'm not going to discuss that at all. But if anybody from overseas is listening, no, I'd say that's the last place they're going to be, and you need to be fishing in the air. Do you want a single grain of sweet corn? But yes, we'll see. We've got a few more practices lined up yet. There isn't another event lined up for us until the World Championships now. We may have a friendly home nations event just to bend a carve, and that would be back at home to have a bit of fun and games, a little bit like the girls did. The Welsh have now got a squad, which is brilliant. I know their captain, know their manager very well. Nick Davis is the captain. Tim Jones is the manager. And, they're doing quite a lot of work to get a squad together. They're hoping to field a team in a World Championship, so it would be brilliant to see Wales there too. I had a note this week saying that Scotland have now officially formed a CARP team as well, and I would hope that Ireland might try and do that as well. So, if that's the case, it would be brilliant just to have a little home nations event.
Yeah.
Always my thought process when I took on the England manager's position was that we don't do this enough. We go out once a year to someone's backyard and fish a competition under a rules pattern that we don't have in the UK. There's 72 hours, not 48 hours, and we don't do that here. And those guys are out doing it all the time. Now, the only way that you can get better at something is practicing. And it's all very well saying, great, we can practice at home because you can do events back at home and you can fish the lakes back at home. That's brilliant. Let's go out and practice a game of football, but then when it comes to match day, you have a game of rugby.
Yeah.
Completely different. Or more to the point, let's practice rugby union, and then when we go out and we play the game, it's rugby league. You have to go out and you have to play the discipline that you're going to be playing in, and we need to do this more and more and more and more if we're to remain as successful as we've been.
Yeah, and have some competition. It's like practicing on your own until you come up against another team, and obviously the home nations can do that. If you can get some some practice going in between. I think that's great news about Scotland. I hope they continue get it all sorted. Moving on. So I know when I attempted to get hold of you a couple of times this week, you've been out filming. Have you been diving? Are you doing BT Sports filming, or what's been going on the last few weeks?
Well, there's all sorts of filming. There's filming going on almost every week at the moment for a number of different things. To answer the first question, have I been diving? I haven't had a chance yet. One of my tanks is in being serviced, but I'm hoping to get out very, very soon. It's been a weird one, hasn't it? It went from being really cold to really hot in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And 3 weeks ago, I was thinking, oh, I'm not sure if I'm going to go yet. And now I'm thinking, blimey, I've missed it. So I'd like to get back and have a go sooner rather than later. So certainly I'll be doing some stuff there. I've got some interesting plans both for the TV series and also for the website that's backing it up. The filming takes me out doing a number of things. We had our first show of the new series air on BT Sport last week, and I've got to say, I'm really, really pleased with the way it went. So are the guys from BT. It was the match coverage of the first round of the UK Angling Championships, and we had some brilliant, brilliant figures on it as well. So I'm very pleased that, A, the first one's gone out. You know what it's like? You've got to get the first one out of the way before you've actually got one through the regulations, etc. So it's almost like the car passing the MOTJ or an exam. Yeah. You submit the programme, but it has to go through various different processes within television before it can be broadcast. They've got to check its content, they've got to approve it, they've got to check the technicalities of it, all of these things. But, we've done it for years with Sky Sport. There wasn't going to be any difference, really, with BT. But even though, you still want it to be a good show. And it was. It went out very well received, so that was good. one of my big things with Sport England recently is that we're looking at the accessibility of angling, and we're having a bit of a drive to make angling more accessible to people. And when I say people, I've got to clarify exactly what this is. And I've had a meeting with the English Federation of Disabled Sports to look at disability, because this is one of the areas that obviously we need to look into. We had a brief look at female participation, had a push with the ladies team there, got some publicity. That's rolling along nicely. The next thing I want to look at is the disabled aspect. But before anybody jumps up and thinks, oh, is it a wheelchair that they look at? Because a lot of the time when we think about disabled angling, you immediately think of a disabled platform or an area of the lake that's been put out for someone to wheel a chair into, and it's like, right, that's where you're going to fish, mate, that's the disabled swim. And it's great to have that facility, but actually what we're looking at is limiting disability. And there's a big difference between what's classed as limiting disability and disability. And limiting disability can be anything. It might be that you're recovering from an operation, you can't walk far. It might be that you're getting on a bit, or just generally unfit, you can't walk far, you can't push a barrow far. You know, it might be angina, it might be that you are registered disabled, it might be any number of things, but there's all sorts of things that restrict the way that people can go fishing because they have some sort of a limiting disability. So one of the drives that we've got on at the moment is a new website that's actually, it's being launched today, and that website is Get Out There, Get Fishing. And you remember we started the Get Out There campaign over Christmas, just encouraging people to go out and fish.
Yeah.
The Get Out There, Get Fishing campaign is a sort of the next step of that, because what we're talking about there is all sorts of events that are going on around fishing, whether it's carp fishing, predator fishing, whatever it might be. There's now a website that centralizes all of these events. It's called Get Out There, Get Fishing. And if you were to go on that now and go, right, I'm in the Northwest, I fancy this weekend going out to a fishing event, I wonder what's on. And we're not listing competitions yet, although it might come into it. This is more sort of tuitions, angling events, occasions, bits and bobs like that. You can click on it, have a look at it and go, oh, right, yes, there's a Get Back Into Angling tuition going on at Wireside this weekend. I'll wander along there. So it's all sorts of things to encourage people to either try different disciplines of the sport or alternatively just get back into it or go out and have tuition. So that's one of the things. And the other one is looking at accessibility. And this comes into the limiting disability side. When you look at fishery websites, a lot of the time what the fishery website does is it tells you what sort of fishing they've got, how much it's going to be, and whether or not you can night fish. And those generally are the three main questions before you get the address and the telephone number. What we're looking at is increasing the information that's available. So you look at whether or not there's toilet showers, facilities on site that would suit people that have limiting disabilities. How far is the walk from the car park? Is there a decent path around it? Bits and bobs like that. So it's a great information service where if you are of slightly limiting disability, then you know that you can go to this fishery because the details are there. So there's a reasonable amount of film backup going on because a picture says 1,000 words and a video says 1,000,000. So if we can do short films about fishery focuses, where to go, what to do, how to do it, that's one of the things that I'm working on. And it, you know, it's not the glamorous top-end television stuff, but it's very, very important from the participation side of things, and it helps a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the Facebook page now. It's not an actual web page, is it? It's a Facebook page.
It is a web page. Yes, it is. It is a web page, and it should be going live. Is it Tuesday today?
It is, yes.
It should be going live today. If it's not up, I might be getting it wrong, and it might be Wednesday that they were going to post it live, but it should be live either today or tomorrow. So certainly by the time this goes out, remember it, Get Out There, Get Fishing.
Yeah, it's not up at the minute, or Google didn't find it, but I found the Facebook group, which I'd already liked some time ago. It was a picture of you, and did a recent thing with Robson Green as well, did you? A video on there?
Yes, that was it. Yeah, there's quite a few people coming on board and, you know, and promoting the page and just encouraging people to get out there. And, you know, I'm not a massive celebrity fan, but I recognise the value of having celebrity endorsing these things. You know, if you've got a known face that says do this, then the chances are people will watch it and it's a reminder. Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, let's take the celebrity out of it. They're all great anglers. They're all really like going. They're all madly passionate about it. It, you know, it's brilliant. And speaking of which, one of the other things we did talking about events was the Carping for Heroes event 2 weekends ago. Now, Carping for Heroes is a charity that was set up a while ago by an ex-soldier called Mal Story, who sadly has died. It's currently run by Dave Coates and Bob Morris, who do a brilliant job, and they asked me to be the patron last year. I was honoured to take that position on. And what we do now is we feed funding into Jim Davidson's Care After Combat charity, which helps ex-servicemen. And, you know, it, brilliant. Jim Davidson came along, he fished. Sorry, he didn't fish. He fished last year. He came along for the whole weekend, did a little comedy set. He was there while everyone else was fishing. Really nice to see the support that we get. And before anybody tunes out and thinks, well, what's all this about? The key is, and it's along with this drive that I've got about getting angling out there. Not only do we want to get anglers out fishing, but I want to get fishing in people's faces. And as a thank you for the 8,000 quid that we raised, Jim invited us to the gala dinner of the Carp After or Care After Combat event at the Dorchester in London. So we were there, big swanky do on Thursday, really, really nice, and fishing was mentioned. Yeah. And, you know, you've got in the room, just as a prime example, you've got Theresa May, the Home Secretary, you've got Michael Gove, you've got Simon Weston, you've got, sorry, somebody's ringing me now, I don't know if I'm, I don't risk cutting them off, I'll probably cut you off by mistake. So Catherine Jenkins was there, and my word, what a woman she is. She's even better in real life than she is on the television. Really, really nice girl, but I had a nice chat with her, General Sir Mike Jackson as well, you know, the commander of the army as it was. And just generally talking with these really influential people about fishing and what fishing brings to the table, and also how good it is at recovery for people that have suffered PTSD, so on and so forth. And, you know, they all get it. They all get it. And I think it's one of the first times, really, that we can have this opportunity and get in there, talk to people like this, certainly from the carp angling's point of view. I don't see that's been done before. And it's nice that people actually do recognise and get it. And, you know, there's an old adage, if you don't ask, you'll never get. And the kid that sits at the back of the class and doesn't say anything, he'll get a reasonable report, but he's never going to shine. And carp fishing so far has just sat there, and it's never really jumped up in these areas and shone. But that is another thing that I want to do with it, and fishing generally.
Yeah, we know how many people it's got off the streets, you know, having a passion and a direction in life, especially if you're less privileged, then obviously that's can only be a great thing. And you know, carp fishing is a great sport. All fishing's a great sport. Obviously, you know, carp fishing's my love. I know many people how it's saved them from, you know, maybe a life of crime or whatever. It's given them something passionate, and it makes people enjoy nature as well, which also then you start seeing litter left by other people. It starts annoying you, and maybe you were the person that left litter previously, and, you know, until you kind of saw the damage it's doing in nature yourself with your own eyes. And it's just plus, plus, plus. And we know all this. It's great for, you know, it's great for other, especially government bodies and stuff, to actually realise this as well. And I suppose this is your job, isn't it, as the you know, as an ambassador working with the Angling Trust and you know, dealing with government and things like this. There's so many little spin-offs where we can raise awareness, can't we?
Yeah, you know, and I think the more that we can do that, the more that we can bang the drum, the more people will take notice of us. So, yeah, it's good. The only downside is, Jay, that my fishing has really suffered over the last, I'd say the last 8 weeks. You know, if ever there's been a time to get out, it's been the last 8 weeks. The amount of fish that are coming out everywhere is incredible. So I've got something to look forward to. I'm gonna go out and, forgive me, carp anglers listening to this, and I get it. But I'm going to go out and I'm going to throw a fly rod around tomorrow. Just have a go. I've never done it before, so I'm going to have a little go at that, just to see what it's like. I went down the river for a picnic the other day with the missus, and there were spotted things jumping up and hitting furry stuff on the surface, and I thought they've got to be easy to catch. So I thought I'd go down and have a crack at that. But I'm away in Hungary next week. Billy Flowers, myself, and Mark Bartlett are fishing in the Machonka Masters over in Hungary. So it's not an official England match, but it is a fairly big competition over in Hungary. You know, like the Big Five in Romania, where they get a lot of, you know, a lot of hefty people there. And, yeah, you know, we want to go out and have a bit of a dust up with those guys. So that'll be interesting to see what goes on there. They reckon it's fairly busy. It's obviously very difficult when we're flying over to get everything logistically that we need over there for a competition, but we shall have a crack at it, and hopefully you'll see some news on that one as well.
Fantastic. We wish you the best of luck. Something else we spoke at length already in the show about is the good news that seems to have come out of the Carp Society with the directors being changed, being voted out. I'm sure that's not the end of it. It's not going to be quite as smooth as maybe the press release indicates. I mean, have you got any behind the scenes background info, anything you can share?
I think the main thing is that there's been movement. I think any carp angler, and there's going to be guys that go Carp Society again, but it is a massive part of history, and it would be brilliant if the Carp Society was up there to represent carp fishing. And I think we've got that movement. There has been a change. Whether that change will be challenged or not, I don't know. It possibly might be, but it will be very difficult to challenge it at a Carp Society fund now, because it will be unreasonable for somebody to challenge that using Carp Society funds, whereas before it was being defended with Carp Society funds.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's an issue that needs to be celebrated, really. The other thing is that I believe that memberships are now being accepted, so all the people that were applying to be members, they will be accepted. And if at any stage any of the old regime were to stand up and say, no, we don't want those people in that have been accepted, they're going to have to give a very, very, very good reason as to why not.
Yeah.
Because after all, it's a membership organisation. So if in accordance with the Articles of Association, if you applied for membership in that period in January, you should be now getting your membership within, I would think, this week. That should be accepted.
And should anybody who didn't apply in January now wish to support and join, can they do so? Or is it still this January window?
No, they can't yet, because what will happen now is that the people that have applied to become members will be allowed to become members. So effectively, I think there were either 46 or 52. So they will be allowed to become members. And then what will happen after that is there will be an annual general meeting, or an extraordinary annual general meeting, where the future officers of the Carp Society will be voted in. Remember, the guys that have been appointed at the moment as directors, that's not the future of the Carp Society. They've been appointed purely to sit there as custodians and guardians of it, to make sure nothing nasty happens to any of the assets until democracy can run its course. And democracy will be, look, we've got members now. The members should be allowed to decide what's happening. Not the directors, it's the members, because it's the shareholders and the members that decide what happens with the organisation. You know, the directors or the organisers are only there to put into operation what the members want.
Yeah.
They can make recommendations, but ultimately the members have to vote it. So effectively what we've got to go through is a full democratic process where officers will be voted in, plans will be put together. I would think one of the first things that should happen is that membership will be open to all immediately. And, you know, I know one of the things that they did do at the last EGM was they amended immediately the entry fee from the ridiculous £95 that was put in there as a barrier to a very sensible £25.
Yeah.
So, you know, what that does straight away is it makes it accessible. And that's the key. And then as soon as those members are in, then they could decide exactly what's going to happen. But the directors will obviously give guidance on what they think should happen, how it should happen, and then the members will vote it. But, Jay, that's what democracy is about, isn't it? You haven't got a dictator deciding what he's going to do for his own benefit. It's got to be done on the basis of democracy. So it's all looking relatively good. And the faster this happens, the harder it will be for anybody to turn around later on and go, hang on a second, you can't do that.
Yeah, but what would you like to see? So let's presume and hope that you know, a sensible body of people are controlling this society, and you know, all this legal wranglings and everything's out of the way. We're left with a new society with some sane people running it democratically. They've got some decent assets in Farriers, in Horseshoe itself. What would you like to see happening? Do you think it's realistic to get the regional meetings going again, or
I think, well, ultimately the public will decide that. You know, it's a little bit like saying, is it possible to sell a DVD now? With so much free stuff out there, you probably can't sell DVDs, whereas in the past you could. So can you organise regional meetings? Possibly. There's a lot of information out there. You know, remember, the reason for regional meetings was information sharing. Then they turned into socials, and then they turned into the opportunity to meet your heroes.
Yeah.
And hear inspirational stories. Now, you can actually do that on the internet. So whether it's feasible or not to do that, I don't know. I'd like to see an attempt to get that back up again, because I think if you've got network and if you've got local influence, then you can build that a lot more. Because one of the problems you always see with any organization is that if there is no communication, or that line of communication is broken, or if there's a disconnect between top and bottom, people don't care. Yeah. But if they feel connected to it, they'll care an awful lot more. So if we could get that back in place, I think it would be brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. What I would like to see ultimately is carp fishing properly represented.
Yeah.
And by that, and you know from the conversations we've had, and I'm sure the listeners know from the conversations they've heard me having with you, that I'm just madly passionate about angling, and carp angling in particular. And I feel that, to a degree, carp angling has always suffered a little bit when it comes to representation, for whatever reason. And I'm not having a go at a governing body, and I'm certainly not having a go at the Angling Trust before anybody gets a bit sensitive about it. What I'm saying is that carp fishing is, like it or not, the biggest area of the freshwater aspect of the sport now. As a result, it needs proper representation. And if it gets proper representation, then brilliant. But there are a number of things that are out there that permanently threaten carp and carp fishing, and they need to be investigated, or they need to be looked into, or carp fishing needs to be represented properly. And if we can lose that disconnect that there is and get more of a connect, I think carp fishing and angling generally will benefit from it.
Certainly. I mean, how do you think we can encourage members? I mean, same with anything, you need to give somebody something, you know, for them to, you know, purchase a membership or whatever. Previously, it used to be a magazine. I know you had to, I was never comfortable with enforcing people to have a membership just to fish Horseshoe, although obviously it's a logical way of gaining members. But I mean, you know, if you're buying something, you want a product. Yes, we all want to be under one umbrella that maybe has some sort of, you know, leverage with lobbying the Angling Trust or whatever under the banner of, you know, here's all those carpers together. But at the end of the day, I joined those types of societies when I was a kid because I wanted to be part of something, which I think you're always going to get for the kids. But, you know, for the older people, for the people like me, like, you know, I'm going to pay me 25 quid a year, and I want to see something for it, you know, whether that be a monthly magazine, a 6-monthly magazine, quarterly, whatever. But I mean, what do you think can be done? What would you like to see?
That's a matter for the marketing department. I don't know, because I look at it sort of ever so slightly differently, and maybe it's maybe it's a rose-tinted view, but I actually quite like the idea of having representation, of having a national governing body. Having a representative group that can feed your information into the national governing body. So, you know, with, why do you join the RSPB? Do you join it because you support birds and wildlife, or do you join it because you want the pen that you get free with it?
Well,
and the boot sticker.
You get a lot of access to go and watch birds, don't you? Being a member of the RSPB, you can get on a lot of properties that are private. I think that's,
I don't know. I'll be honest with you, I don't know enough about it. I know that that's the case with the National Trust. If you join the National Trust, then you get discounts on National Trust stuff. I don't know what the RSPB thing is.
Yeah, but I think it's similar. There's a lot of bird hides on nature reserves that are inaccessible unless you are a member. So this is my point, is the Carp Society can give stuff. You know, they've got properties, waters, you know, obviously people like Tim have long been involved. They've got the capability to put together a journal, a magazine, whatever. And I'd like to see all that happen. I'd like to see it have thousands and thousands of members again. Now, I think the regional things are impractical again, because like you say, there's somebody in every area doing something similar across the winters these days. And, you know, back in the day, it was for fundraising purposes. The Carp Society have access to funds now with the, you know, with the syndicates and stuff that they run. So I don't think they're ever going to be short of money long term, maybe initially while they're getting over this, you know, legal fees and all the short term stuff. But long term, it's a, you know, it's probably an affluent business. But, you know, I'd like to see it thrive. I really would. You know, I would have liked to have seen a new one crop up if the carp site didn't be revived, which it looks like it's going to be, you know, with the best intentions. Yeah. But, you know, I'm just thinking of ways that, you know, would make me want to join, would make, you know, that you'd be proud to be a part of.
You know, we all have different interests, and angling's and specifically carp angling is what it is to what you want to be. And, you know, if you want to go out at the weekend with your mates and catch a few doubles and have a beer and enjoy yourself and not cause any bother, then brilliant. I quite like the competition side of things, and I know you like going out on low stock, big pitch, catching big ones. So immediately you've got three opposite, or you've got opposite ends of the scale with one down the middle. Coming from the competition side of things, I look at the state of UK competition fishing at the moment with sort of eyes of sadness, really, where you look at what's happened to it and how the numbers have dropped off, and how I'd quite like to see a sort of standardisation of rules. So one thing straight away would be, let's see if we can standardise a competition tier structure in the UK that can feed properly through to Team England. And it was something that, you know, I wanted when I was running the British Carp Champs years ago. But for whatever reason, it couldn't happen back then because the top end didn't want it. Now the top end wants it, but the bottom end can't necessarily provide it as of yet. So, you know, you look at how many events are out there. There's also, I hear some horror stories, and I'm not having to go at the big events that you might immediately think of. I'm thinking about some of the smaller events where, you know, four people are turning up to an event and three go through. I heard of one event where four people turned it up and four people went through because they hadn't got the numbers. So, you know, no disrespect, and lucky boys, they hadn't even got to wet a line. The organiser turned around and went, tell you what, you're all through, why don't we just all go home? You don't need a cast in. Wow. It's like, well, how can you run that as an event? You know, that's just wrong. And then suddenly you've got someone in an event somewhere else that's actually qualified because they fished against 12, got through in the semi-final, and the bloke that didn't even have to fish in the eliminators got through on the bye. You know, he's knocked the other one out with a lucky cast or whatever, and suddenly he's through to finals. And you just think, you know, there needs a little bit of standardisation somewhere. And I, you know, I get it. I understand that there's buys, and I understand that some people can be lucky, and I understand it can be a technical game. But it's totally unregulated.
Yeah.
Each individual organisation is regulating their individual events. And the individual events, some of them are good, some of them are brilliant, some of them, quite frankly, are absolutely hopeless.
And you think a body like the Carp Society could standardise things, you know, it could be the top of the tree, you know, below the Angling Trust and the government sort of thing.
Exactly. If carp fishing was governed by the Carp Society, then for a start, you know, you can have the record lists, you can have the competitions wing. Just in exactly the same way that match fishing, you know, there used to be the National Federation of Anglers and the match fishing wing there. You have the Carp Society running the carp competitions in a proper pyramid tier structure, feeding up to the official governing body, official championships, or the official governing body national squad. You then have the political wing where, you know, and let's face it, the Angling Trust do an absolutely magnificent job with some of their political campaigning. And some of the legal stuff they do. Fish legal are brilliant. If you've got a fishery or you're a club and you haven't got fish legal cover, then you need your bumps read. You really, really should have it because they are brilliant. But you know what? They're overworked. There are certain areas that they specialise in and certain areas that they don't know an awful lot about. And if we can give them assistance from underneath with regards to carp fishing, then that would be a great help as well. But, you know, I'm talking about things that are outside my remit. It will evolve itself as to what it's going to be. Somebody needs to make the suggestions, but the whole point of democracy is that the Carp Society can be what it wants to be, or more to the point, what people want it to be. And I had a very interesting conversation with a lad this morning. I won't embarrass him by naming him, but he was going to do all sorts of helping out, and then he suddenly sat down and thought, you know what? Carp fishing's here without it. It'll probably still be here with it or without it anyway. It doesn't really affect me in any way. Why do we need the Carp Society? And technically, he's correct. Technically. Because actually, technically, you don't need a government. If you didn't have a government, what you would have is anarchy. And then everything would find its own level. And it would effectively self-govern. And my argument with him was that if you have a proper government in place, what they can do is they can try and bring some structure in, and they can also try and push it forwards, and its growth will be probably better and more structured if there is a body in place, as opposed to if there isn't one. Because at the moment, carp fishing free wills.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And I like the idea, more to think about. I like the idea of some of the things that they could possibly do, and, you know, and be a very strong organisation going forwards. Because I know there's a lot of people turned off by the sort of Carp Society, you know, the stuff that's gone on over the last few months. I mean, you know, personally, I didn't want to see, you know, somebody profit from. You know, I contributed many, many years ago as a member, and, you know, in the lead up to getting the money together to purchase Horseshoe, I just don't want to see somebody swan off into the sunset, you know, with that money in their back pocket.
Sorry to jump in there. That's just morally wrong. And if your moral compass points in the right direction, that's morally wrong. You can't either want or allow that to happen. Now, if nothing happens in the future other than the Carp Society exists in exactly the same way that it was previously, but it's existing for carp anglers, albeit the one that want to fish Horseshoe and Farriers and Langholm and whatever, and go to the society conference, then brilliant. Let it carry on doing that. If that's what everybody wants, then fine. That's what democracy has decided. I think that it's got so much more potential.
Yeah, agreed.
To go further and represent carp fishing.
Yeah, that's why I think, the more I think about it, I'm saying, right, well, there's a body there, it's been run by some sane people, they're looking at a non-profit organisation, maybe turning some of the bits into a charity, then, right, what can we do with this great body of carp angling that's out there now? Let's encourage everybody to join, let's get creative, let's have magazines, or, you know, whatever it can do to be great, and I think it would benefit the carp industry, carp scene generally. So that's how I hope it goes. But we've done about 45 minutes now, which is the target for Hughes News. So unless there's anything you need to enlighten us on, then we'll see you next month.
No, absolutely not. That's me, over and out, and I'm going angling. Enjoy yourself, guys.
hope you catch some trout and salmon and whatever else you catch on the floor.
Oh God, no, it won't be salmon. No interest in the nose. It'll be trout, because if I'm totally honest with you before I sign off, what I want to do is I want to go and get some fly lessons so I can learn how to cast a fly. It just so happens it's on the river because it looked nice, but if I can perfect it, I really fancy going out onto a local lake near me and having a go on the surface for them. Because chucking a mixer out on a fly rod and catching a double figure fish off the surface on a fly rod, I reckon would be great fun. So I'm going to have a little crack at that. So that's the bigger picture. I'm dipping into trout for a very, very short period of time purely to learn. Other than that, it's carp all the way.
Fantastic. We'll catch you next month.
See you, see you soon.
Hughes News.
So thank you to Rob. Rob's back the penultimate show of every month. You've just had a beep. I heard a beep.
I did, just towards the end of Rob. It was on my middle rod. Just a single bleep. And I think there's something down there, because the wind has actually dropped. That wasn't a wind bleep. That pesky little rat is nowhere to be seen at the minute. He's not walking to me bobbins.
It looks like you're probably going to catch tonight.
No pressure, thanks. But either way, go on. Run off.
Did you notice on our SoundCloud page one of the early shows, didn't it, you had a beep and I went oh, it was like, and people thought it was quite funny, so we made it a little ringtone or text message tone, or something. We put it on our SoundCloud page. It's just called Beep. You can download it, you can use it as a text use it as a text alert or something. For some reason that's getting thousands of plays a month, isn't it, that beep? Do you think somebody's linked it to a website or something? It must be on a website that keeps flashing up, because no individual item on our SoundCloud page gets the volume of plays that thing's getting. So I think somebody's linked it, haven't they, to a page or something?
Yeah, definitely. And it'd be nice if we could include it in our stats. That'd give us a proper boost. But no, you know where it was? It was your rods. We were sat in the front of your van on Peg 1 at Cromwell.
Ah,
that's when it was. It didn't go though, did it?
No, it didn't go. And was it something like, it went like beep, go on. something like that. And so we made it a little downloadable thing, so you can use it as a, you can use it as a, like a text alert or something on your phone. It's there to download on our SoundCloud page, but I'd love to know what sites got a link to it. It must be like every time you click on a page or something, it, it plays it, because it's got thousands and thousands of plays, and like it's going up every month. So
if, we're gonna have to trace it and send them an invoice.
if you know, if you've seen it somewhere, if it's on a site, then please let us know. I'm just curious as to where it is. I mean, it's out there, it's free content, anyone can use it if they want. I'd just love to know who's using it, what for.
What could it possibly actually be used for?
Yes, I have no idea. I have zero idea. So we have a deal with Carp Talk. Carp Talk, the digital version, comes out every single Saturday, and the printed version comes out on Tuesday, which is probably when you're going to hear this episode now. Carp Talk is probably the only weekly news magazine. It's got features in there. It's got up-to-date catch reports and competitions. You can download the digital version to your iPad, your Android phone, your computer, PC, MacBook, whatever you have, and you get it from pocketmags.com. It's a bit cheaper than the printed edition as well. Comes out every single Saturday, so you get it 3 days early if you do get the digital one. And what's in there this week, Mark?
Well, this week is a summer bumper issue. There was extra 48 pages of Carpi content.
Wow.
So, yeah, that does... does come with a small increase in price. It says $2.49 for the downloadable version from pocketmags.com, or $2.99 for the printed version in shops. And there's, and there's a freebie.
Yeah, there is. There's a,
like a freebie.
The new Nashbaked cappuccino boilies. I've not smelled them yet, but everyone says they smell amazing.
Smell of coffee?
I'm pretty sure they do. Coffee smelling boilies. Yeah, I'll be interested to see how they go down. And you get a free sample of them with this bumper edition. And what else is in there? I bet there's the usual Welly 50, but there's five other 50s, isn't there?
Yeah, well, one of the Welly Wacky first, you've mentioned it. It's only just over 50, but it'll be a, well, I'll say only just over 50, it's slightly less massive. It's just
the weekly Welly Whacker.
Yeah. But we're going to start doing the weekly Willows Whacker.
Yeah.
250s in as many days from Eric's in Yorkshire.
Yeah, Eric's Willows been fishing its head off. You'll probably know that Willows had flooding issues, as did the rest of Leeds and West Yorkshire. They've been closed for quite some time, while I know the lads, Tom Broomhead and the rest of the lads, been working really, really hard down there to get it open again. They only opened a few pegs initially because a lot of them were still swamp bound. One of my friends, Lee Spence, was on there the other week. Actually, he had a 47, which I think was the biggest fish that had been out since the floods. You know, obviously, when you have massive floods like that, you're kind of curious as to where the fish are. Have they moved around? So there's a few lakes behind. I know there's a load of trout escaped from the trout lake at the back that are in Willows now. A lot of the fish are getting removed as they get caught, but it seems that all the big ones are still in there because Willows did 250s in as many days. I know there's been quite a few 40s out as well. Obviously, Spenny had a 47. Shout out to Spenny. So yeah, it appears that all the fish are in there, and that's another cracking lake, a big fish lake of the north. There's also stories of a mega hit on Nash's Church Pool. One angler had three of the lake's biggest fish. You can read all about it in the Carp Talk. There's the nominations for the 2015-2016 Regional Carp Angler of the Year competition. The more developments on the Carp Society, the press release and stuff. And there's a load of features in there as well, isn't there, Mark, this week?
Yeah, quite a few, with it being the summer bumper issue. I really need some speech therapy. But Yeah, we've got Tom Maker on he reveals some of his linear secrets. He does love a creamy one, does Tom?
Yeah, Tom Maker's fantastic angler, one of the England team guys, and he knows linear fisheries extremely well.
He really does. He smashes it up.
Yeah, I'm curious. If you go into linear, you don't want to miss this week's Carp Talk. To get some of Tom Maker's secrets is priceless. Crowe accepts an invitation to fish the Crown Estate from the Crown Estate to fish its new syndicate water at Windsor Great Park. I'd love to know what's in there. You may find out in Carp Talk. Tim Rowland enjoys a memorable hit on Lynch Hill's Christchurch Lake. Mark's just banged in my ear. That's nearly deafened me somehow. Lincolnshire ace Jim Wilson begins plans for his summer campaign, and there's the competitions. We want all our Carpcast listeners to win the £2,000 worth of prizes being given away in this issue. There's sessions at Linear, there's Navitas clothing, Nash stalking packages, Ridge Monkey goodies, Tasker grill pans, and loads of baits from the UK Bait Company. The bumper editions are always ones not to miss of Carp Talk, and you can grab it this week. Digital version, pocketmags.com, or go to the Carp Talk website and you can see where their stockists are, or go in your local news agents and tell them you want it. Make them stock it, or just get them to order it for you. So that's it, Mark. You haven't caught a fish while we've been on the phone. You will do one day, I guess.
I will do, yeah. And one day you might actually have some rods out while we record. You'll be with a chance. At least I'm trying.
Yeah, I'm going to try next week. Unfortunately, moving house in May is not recommended. The finest angling month of the year.
You didn't think that one through, did you?
We didn't have a choice, unfortunately. It's kind of how it dropped. But especially as I got off to such a flyer this year, you know, I was really, really glad the fishing buzz. But hopefully I'll get out with Roger next week. We'll have a decent session somewhere down the country. So, yeah, that's it from us. Until next week, we've got Nash's new feature next week. You've got a couple of days to come up with a name to have a chance of winning the Slaphead Bobbins. We'll have the new feature next week. Until then, I hope you catch one.
Yep, see you next week.
Check out the website at thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.